It's Thursday here at One Bill Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasher. We're getting ready for the big show.
Today, we're going to get joined by Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report. He's going to tell us why he thinks Tremaine Edmonds might be NFL Rookie of the Year on the defensive side of the ball.
Second-year linebacker Matt Milano has his eye on a starting spot in the Buffalo defense. He'll join us live at 1:30.
Also later in the show, Lorenzo Alexander is going to stop by.
One Bills Live starts right now.
Oh, a great tackle by Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
Welcome to the show. John Murphy and Steve Tasher coming in. We're live at One Bills Drive with One Bills Live. It's a nice day here in Orchard Park. It's a beautiful day. Too nice to be indoors, except if you got to do a three-hour radio show and talk about the Bills and the NFL. Thanks for joining us here today. John Murphy and Steve Tasher. Yes, I did in the open. Here's the deal. We taped that about, 11:15 a.m.?
11:15, something like that.
I had screwed up the previous one, the previous taping, by calling the show the wrong name. And so I didn't want to have to do it over again. So when we got started, I said Steve Tasher. In my mind, I'm thinking, well, Steve's or I am probably going to screw up something else. So this is probably going to have to be retaped anyway.
Right. But so we just keep going.
Let's just keep it going.
Let's just go with it.
But I know your name is not Tasher.
Yeah, I know. Right? I know you knew that. And I believe you, I knew the same thing because I was going to say Doug Farrar's coming on the show, and he's going to talk about Tremaine Edmonds being the defensive player of the rookie defensive player. You know, and I didn't say defensive rookie of the year. It was too hard to say, and I had to spit out on the defensive side of the ball. It's, you know,
you don't want to be the guy that forces the retape.
The angst associated with taping that little soft open right before we come on the air is exponentially out of whack.
It outweighs the benefits.
Absolutely.
So if you're listening, producer Jay Harris, which is debatable on a regular basis,
it does give us an extra 30 seconds to settle. Yeah, it gives us an extra 30 seconds to settle down in here after the instigators clear out. And you know.
But there's a lot of it's easier to do a live show than it is to tape something.
It's nice, though, to have that daily competition with ourselves to get that spit out.
Sort of the wake-up call. Are you guys ready? Because here you go.
No, we're not.
Easier to go live because we screw up all the time and just keep going. Nobody notices.
Yeah, you just drive through it.
Yeah. Welcome to the show.
It's good to be here. It's nice, beautiful weather.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
It really is.
It really is.
For as bad as April was.
I don't even remember April now.
I do. I've got emotional scar tissue from it.
It's really nice.
It is
What are
nice.
We talking about, 73 degrees, 74 degrees, sunny skies?
I'm telling you, though, I tell people this all the time. If it was like this all year round, there'd be 3 million people living in Buffalo, and it would stink. So let's just keep it the way it is.
Yeah, don't tell anybody how nice
the riffraff out of our town.
Thanks for joining us today. We got a good show. On the field, the Bills have just wrapped up another day of their off-season conditioning program. The rookies come back tomorrow for their rookie development program. The veterans rejoin the rookies on Monday. One more session of off-season development, and then on Tuesday they get into OTAs. And the OTAs change a little bit. They can do teamwork. They can do 7-on-7. They can do 9-on-7, 11-on-11. OTAs next Tuesday. We were talking to Pat DeMarco yesterday about it, Steve, and he mentioned how it'll be a nice little ramp up in the intensity and what they're able to do on the field.
Well, you think about it, and I think it's good. Now, the league didn't do it for this reason, but I think it is an added benefit. You come in here, these guys are in here for weeks, right?
I mean, I think it's like 9 weeks.
9 weeks. If they were allowed to do the exact same thing for 9 weeks, they would get absolutely sick of it. Because they escalate a little bit every week, I think it keeps them interested. They come in, they got some new stuff to do, some new drills, some more intensity that they can throw on top of it. I think it's really a good idea for the league because, man, oh, man, 9 weeks of doing, you know, 7-on-7 or 7-on-air or, you know, 9-on-7 or walkthroughs and doing the exact same thing for 9 weeks, oh, my gosh, that's horrible for players. So ramping it up as they go along, I think it's a brilliant idea. It keeps the players engaged, and I think it'll increase attendance. You know, I think it makes guys want to be here.
This all came about in the 2011 CBA, so since then. But I recall, now he's currently, an executive vice president of the league, Troy Vincent. While he was playing here, and he had his last few playing years here with the Buffalo Bills, I recall having a long conversation with him on a spring day like this, and he was livid about how hard the practices were back then here. And he said, we got to do something about this. When I retire, I think he thought he'd be on the union side, as a matter of fact.
Well, yeah, he probably
in fact,
did.
He ran for the union head. Yeah. But I think his goal was to do something about this so that It wouldn't, and every team is different, right? Team had a there was no standard league wide how you practice or what you could do in practice. You could do whatever you want.
It was a time frame. You could do whatever you wanted within a certain number of days. You had like 14 days you could meet as a unit or as a group or as a team, whatever, 15 days, whatever the number was. There was no restrictions on what you could do with inside of it, except maybe no pads or a limited number of pad days, but you could do whatever you wanted. And consequently, there were head coaches who took advantage of it and had their guys banging around and doing stuff that was way over the top intensity-wise, and there was no run-up to it. You could, like it is now, where they escalated little by little. You can come in, get a little bit of shape, start getting back into football motions before you start going out there and running sideline to sideline with a helmet on. So, yeah, there's no question the league's getting it better. And Troy Vincent, who is – he is a sharp guy. I was glad to see him land with the league and lend a voice of sanity to some of the stuff that goes on out there and put the players a little bit up there in the thing. Although, you know, the league has always been pretty, you know, pretty money focused rather than player focused. But I think it's good to see here Troy had some effect.
He was onto it. You know, way back then, Malarkey was coaching. We're talking about 13 years ago. And they were here in the spring. And it didn't, you know, from the outside observer, you didn't know what they were doing in practice. But Troy Vincent said, this is stupid. We're all doing it. And plus, Vincent, having played a little bit around the league, had friends all over the league and knew what other teams were doing. And he mentioned it then. It was crazy to have every team doing something a little bit different in every NFL city. So they've changed that. And now it is strictly prohibited what goes on at these OTAs. And the OTAs, as I said, start next week. And as a matter of fact, Steve, there have been recent incidents where teams have been fined, I believe, right? Didn't somebody lose a draft pick for a bad practice, an illegal practice? I believe that was the case a couple of years ago.
Yeah, there are some pretty severe penalties, and the question is who's policing it and how often they do it, and do the teams get warnings before they show up? Are the wrong guys practicing, guys who aren't under contract or maybe are or on the PUP list and can't practice, you know, that kind of thing. There's all kinds of, guidelines that govern these things, and it's interesting. I don't know who governs that stuff. I don't know do they get a heads up? They got to get a heads up, or it's got to be, somebody showing up to say, we'll see. I still think they're handling it a lot better. They're getting better and better. I think with the money the guys are making, I think there's less and less pushback for the amount of time they're spending here. They'll always get pushback for the intensity level and how many padded practices and how much contact and how much full go practices there are. But I don't think they're going to get as much pushback for just having these guys in here practicing and being around the facility and learning stuff in the classroom setting. Even when I was playing, for the money I was making 20 years ago, they could ask me to do that and I wouldn't have pushed back too much because it would have been worth it.
Our producer, Jay Harris, reminded me it was the Seahawks who a couple of years ago were fined, disciplined for violating. And this is interesting. During the June 6, 2016 OTA day, Seahawks players engaged in excessive on-field physical contact, which is prohibited. That's part of the 2011
bargaining agreement.
Yeah, bargaining CBA. Agreement. So the Seahawks were fined $400,000 and they had to forfeit their first week of OTAs in 2017, 3 days. Now, who ratted them out? How did they find out?
Probably maybe the player rep.
The NFL, I'll read you what that says here. The NFL and the Players Association independently reviewed the Seahawks' June 6, 2016 on-field practice video and agreed that the club had violated the no live contact rule. So you can imagine some player probably went to the union, the PA, and said, hey, we're doing too much. And they requested the video, got it. And the Seahawks were fined $400,000, which is not inconsiderable. And they lost 3 OTA days the following year.
That's not just pocket change.
Yeah.
That's a player's salary. That's almost the minimum wage for one of these guys, and plus the draft pick.
And they lost a fifth-round pick.
Yeah, that's kind of significant.
It's significant.
And 3 days of next year's OTAs.
Yeah, so teams don't do it. Most teams don't. Seahawks did, got caught. Anyway, how do we get on that topic? Because they're moving to OTAs next Tuesday.
They're moving up the schedule and they're starting to intensify things. I think the players are good. I think they're going to be good with it. I think it's something that keeps it fresh for them instead of just coming in repeating last week, this week.
Right.
It's a little more fun.
It'll be different.
Yeah.
On the show today, coming up today, in this first hour, lots of time to talk. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Doug Farrar of BleacherReport.com. He's written a lot about, he's written a little bit about the Bills, but a lot about the league. He is a league observer, and he really likes Tremaine Edmonds, right? Buffalo's first-round pick.
Yeah, his take is that of all the guys out there, Tremaine Edmonds has a chance to be Defensive Rookie of the Year. We spoke about him in the open we were making fun of, but you got guys like, you know, Denzel Ward, Cleveland's corner that they got, Minka Fitzpatrick in Miami, Jair Alexander up in Green Bay, Mike Hughes in Minnesota, Josh Jackson in Green Bay, Roquan Smith in Chicago, Bradley Chubb in Denver. You know, they got these guys. They got some high draft picks on the defensive side, but it's Doug Farrar saying that Tremaine Edmonds has a chance to be Defensive Rookie of the Year amongst all those guys. Even, you know, a lot of people think Bradley Chubb's got that chance being on a great defense in Denver and having Von Miller on the other side and having, you know, it'll be a chance for him to break out and have some success early in his career. But with Tremaine Edmonds coming in, standing in the middle of a defense, being an off-the-ball linebacker, he thinks he might be Defensive Rookie of the Year, which is – I see it. I mean, there's an argument to be made for that, given his abilities and given the fact that he's going to be in the middle linebacker of a 4-3 defense. He's going to be making a lot of tackles, or that's the plan anyway. So we'll see.
So Doug Farrar joins us at 1 o'clock today, talk about a variety of topics. Just a lot of defense today in the Bills. 1:30, Matt Milano, second-year linebacker, Boston College product, got in the starting lineup last year, likely to be a starter this year. Matt Milano joins us in studio today at 1:30. We'll check with him how his second year differs from his rookie year here with the Bills. And at 2 o'clock, another linebacker, Lorenzo Alexander, makes a visit with us. It's been a week and a half, almost 2 weeks since Lorenzo was here. We're talking a lot of defense today, which, you know, we usually talk a lot about the quarterback, but defense is front and center today. That's good.
Yeah, that's part of our Twitter poll as well, which is so we're leaning very hard to the defensive side of the ball today. That's fine. It's a nice little change.
Yeah, on Twitter today, and the topic to talk about, and the one we'd love to hear your voice on the telephone line as well. If you're interested, talk about anything you want, 803-0550. Toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. And defense, the Bills. Look, the Bills last year, 26th in the league in overall defense. 26th. Yeah. That's six from the bottom. Not good. Right? Not good
it's
at
not
all.
Good.
Defensive head coach and an accomplished defense coordinator in Leslie Frazier. They got a ton of takeaways, but they didn't stop the run very well. They were 29th against the run. They didn't rush the passer very well. They didn't get a lot of sacks. 26th defense in the league last year. They got to get better, right? They've made some additions, right? You know that. Starlo Tulele and Trent Murphy and Tremaine Edmonds we talked about, some others. Following their offseason additions, where will the Buffalo defense rank in 2018 and why? Where will the Bills' defense rank in the league this year, and why? Are they going to get better? Are they going to stay the same? On Twitter, you know, folks are voting right now. On Twitter, 59% of you say they're going to be middle of the pack, which I guess we would interpret between, what, 11 and 20?
Yeah, 11 and 20, 11 and 21.
They were 26 last year. 35% of you say they're going to be a top 10 defense. 6% of you think they're going to be about the same. Following the Bills' offseason additions, where would the Buffalo defense rank this year, and why? Where are they going to rank? Give us a call. We'd love to discuss. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. When the topic came up at our morning meeting, Steve, you were over the top.
Come on now.
You said, oh, they're a top 10 defense.
I'm still on a sugar
high. Whoa, slow down there,
buddy. I'm still on a sugar high from drinking a Kool-Aid. But I do think they're going to be a top 10 defense. Yeah, I do.
That's a big jump, Steve.
It is. And one of the reasons they were even competitive last year was their ability to get turnovers. And that came from their secondary. Their secondary, I think, is going to be every bit as good as it was a year ago, maybe in some respects even better, given their second year in this defense. On top of that, they should be able to get a pass rush more so than they were last year. Starlo Tulele. And also Trent Murphy gives them a little bit of edge. You got to think maybe Shaq Lawson's going to have a bounce back year. Jerry Hughes also is back with the addition of Harrison Phillips and Kyle Williams coming back. They should be able to roll guys through and stay fresh with all those guys. Eddie Yarbrough coming back. So they've got some guys with a year and some guys with some experience in a defense of this type, even though they've got a couple of really key new guys in Lotu Lele and Trent Murphy. I think they're going to get more pass rush. They were 31st in the league in sacks last year. They got no pass rush. And even despite that, they had all those turnovers in the first half of the year that really sprungboard them all the way to this playoffs. I think that'll enhance their chances to do that and at least maintain that kind of level of turnover rate. And I think Starlo Tulele and also Harrison Phillips are going to really help them up front in the middle to get them into third and longs by coming in, stopping the run on first and second down. That's what I think. And yeah. Murph was like,
I was like, really? Top 10? That's a huge jump. I hope it happens. I hope you're right. I think they're going to get better. I do think, for all the reasons you just enumerated, yes, they should be better up front with Lotulelei, with Trent Murphy in particular. I think Harrison Phillips has a lot to offer, maybe on a limited basis early, maybe play more into the rotation as it goes along. Yeah, as the season moves along. I can't wait to see Tremaine Edmonds in the middle of this defense. I don't know that they have essentially the same crew on the back end, right? Vontae Davis replacing the corners, E.J. Gaines, they had last year. So maybe that's a bit of an upgrade. It'd be hard to imagine them getting as many takeaways and important takeaways as they got last year.
Oh, yeah. It was unbelievable. Incredible takeaways. That first 7 or 8 games of the season, really unbelievable how many turnovers they got.
The game in Atlanta. When that's happening, you sit back and ride the wave and enjoy it. But I don't think you can count on it, and I don't think you can count on that sort of takeaway surge like they had last year.
If you
get it, that's fine. It's great when you get it, but is that going to happen again? I don't know.
Here's another thing too, and this is why I kind of feel like I'm on an island when I start making this argument. They're going to be able to throw the football better. They're going to throw the football better than they did last year. I'll say that right now. That's going to keep that offense on the field a little bit longer than they were a year ago. The one thing that last year's offense had that was good was the fact that they did not turn it over. Other than that, they were just okay in every other respect. They were 31st in passing, and because of that, they ran the football a ton. Now, look, Shady is Shady. He's elite. He had 1,200 yards rushing last year, and he's a great pass catcher, 59 grabs, all the stats that are great. But I think Shady's going to have a little more help from the quarterback spot this year. I'm not as down on the offensive line as a lot of people are. I have a lot of faith in the guys that they brought in and the guys that are remaining here. Everybody says they lost their left tackle. No, they didn't. Their starting left tackle returns in Deion Dawkins. The only thing they're going to have a hard time replacing, in my opinion, is Eric Wood at center, and they brought Russell Bodine in from Cincinnati, who is a veteran player who's played extremely well on very good offensive lines. So I think this is going to be a better offense than it was a year ago, which means, and in regards to the topic we're talking about, this Twitter poll, their defense is going to play better. There's going to be less pressure on them. And I think they're going to make the most of it. In the second year of this defense for the secondary, a bunch of guys that are remaining from that front seven, I think it's just going to be that much better. So we'll see if it happens. I'm with you, though, Murph. It'll really be hard for them to duplicate their turnover rate that they started that season with last year.
And not just the number, the kind of takeaways they were getting.
They were timely.
I mean, Tre'Davious White's touchdown in Atlanta, that's a crazy. I still think the call was wrong. It still looks like an incomplete pass to me. You know the play I'm talking about?
I can't remember.
It was a huge play. Won the game, essentially. I don't know if that should have been probably an incomplete pass, but they ruled it in favor of the Bills. The Bills took it and ran with it and made a great play out of it.
Yeah.
That was the key play of the game, really. Tre'Davious White on what looked like an incomplete forward pass and a tremendously smart move. Didn't hear a whistle, scooped it up and ran it into the end zone from about 45 yards out. Huge play there. Big takeaway.
We're here on MSG. We're sitting here watching it, and here's the question: if they reviewed it, which they did, how do you dispute that?
Well,
I mean,
replay stinks. That's how I dispute it.
The ball came out of the palm of his hand. That's why he didn't have control of the ball coming forward. That's why
incomplete pass. But whatever, I'll take
plus,
it.
Plus, Alberto,
there's more of that.
It wasn't Dean Blandino in the review booth. It was Alberto Riveron, and that's
I'll take more of it. I think they're going to get better on defense. I think they're middle of the pack. You know, they were 18th in points allowed last year, and I think somewhere around there is probably the true measure of this defense. Not horrible, not great either. And if they finish between like 15 and 20 after going 26 last year, that'll be, to me, a pretty good bump up. But what do you think? Give us a call, 803-0550, toll free 1-888-550-2550, or weigh in via Twitter at @OneBillsLive. On the tweet sheet, a couple of folks have thoughts on this. Where will the Bills defense rank in 2018?
What do you got from there, Justin? Steve? If Vontae Davis can stay healthy, which is the big question, this defensive secondary will be good. The line may have gotten a little better with depth. Still think we need some depth at linebacker, maybe a vet at middle linebacker
to
back up Tremaine Edmonds, yeah.
The linebacker
But
ranks
listen,
look
the middle linebacker
right
middle linebacker spot is filled. Nobody's gonna take over for Tremaine Edmonds. There isn't a guy available that the Bills could get unless they trade for some Ray Lewis or somebody. It's going to be a depth spot. And I tell you what, Tremaine Edmonds, from what we've seen him in minicamp and on film in college and what he looks like out there, that guy's going to be on the field every defensive snap. If he's ready and healthy, he's out there,
but
period.
Justin points out depth, and maybe there
depth,
is –
you need – what, is he going to – the middle linebacker you're bringing in going to cover kicks? Who cares?
Hopefully he can do that. But
he's not going to help your defense.
See, right now, the Bills' linebacker depth overall – is Ramon Humber, Tana Vallejo, yeah. Deion Lacey, Julian Stanford, Xavier Woodson-Luster, and Corey Thompson.
Right.
It would be nice to have somebody backing up at linebacker who's played a little bit. Yes, Ramon Humber has played a little
you're
bit,
right.
but a little bit.
But 1 year. But he's, you know, he's – you're right. I mean, that's a concern. You want deep, good guys to come in for guys, even if they just want to take a series off. You're right. But the line, that's on defense. That's odd because the secondary is so good, and because they brought so many new faces and quality free agents in on the defensive line. The linebackers are, you know, last group standing. So they've got a number one draft pick that stands out amongst all those guys as being the guy. But you're right. I mean, you look at the outside with Vallejo and Milano. Humber, okay.
Deion Lacey, these are unknown quantities.
But that doesn't mean your defense is going to be in the bottom third of the league.
I think it'll be somewhere between 15 and 20.
I think it's going to be top 10. You're right. That might, I do think they're going to be less than 12. Top dozen, top 13.
I hope you're right.
I think they're going to be. Statistically much much better than that. Much much better than they were a year ago. I'm going to say top 10.
It's important to note this, too. And, yes, the numbers show the Bills' 26th-ranked defense last year. If you ask those coaches, Leslie Frazier and some of the others, they'll tell you we were 18th in points allowed. They will tell you that is the key metric for them.
Oh,
How many points did we give up?
That's
and there is some truth to that. I will give you that. There is something to be said for that. It's about how not the yardage that you give up, but how many points are you giving up? How many plays are you giving up? Maybe you want to look at it that way.
Right.
And they probably were a little better than 26 last year.
Yeah. And I'll tell you, like we said, we keep harping on it, but, man, I can't tell you how hard it is, but they got a ton of turnovers. And that really took a lot of opportunities away from their opponents. And when you talk to people around the league, including myself, the only stat that matters for defense is points allowed.
Yeah.
And they were 18th in the league on that.
Minicamp Jack tweets in on the tweet sheet, they will make a big jump defensively in 2018. Lotulelei and Phillips should help shore up the middle, run defense. Hopefully Trent Murphy can improve a weak pass rush and free up Jerry Hughes a little bit. Secondary, if healthy, should be solid. Milano adds depth at linebacker, he writes, and Edmonds is the freak athlete they were missing. I got to agree with all of that, and I think it'll be a jump up this year. Yeah, there'll be more numbers up front with Lotulelei and Phillips, and I think good numbers up front.
Right.
I think there'll be Trent Murphy will help the pass rush as he comes back from his injury last year. That's what the hope is here anyway. I think the hope is for a big rebound from Jerry Hughes in terms of production.
Right.
And they got to get that from Jerry Hughes this year. That is key for any defense.
So is Minicamp Jay, is he on my side of it, or he says a big jump?
Big jump. I don't know.
Trenton Johnson is in the top 10 because of the addition of guys like Lotulelei and Murphy, a healthy Vontae Davis, rookies Phillips and Edmonds to a defense that's already scrappy and well coached. My nickname for them, we already got a nickname coming in, the Tsunami Defense. I don't know why that fits with the Buffalo Bills, a tsunami, but there it is. He thinks it's going to be a top 10 defense because of all the guys. And plus, you know what? They are well coached.
Absolutely. How do you think the Bills defense is going to do? Where are they going to rank this year? Give us a call. Tweet it into us, 803-0550, or toll free, 1-888-550-2550.
I'll hammer this one more time, though.
Yeah.
All right, I was telling you this, and when we were getting ready for the show, I said, listen, Tyrod Taylor played in 14 games last year. He was benched for the first half of the Chargers game, so we'll throw that game out. He was on the bench injured for the Indianapolis game, so we'll throw that game out. So there are 14 games in which Tyrod Taylor started, right? Seven of those games he threw for less than 200 yards. Two of those seven games he threw for less than 100 yards. 56 yards he threw against New Orleans, which is the next week is when he got benched. I think that fact alone spells that this offense is going to throw the football much better and much more consistently than they did last year, which means they're going to help that defense get into the top 10.
By being better offensively.
Yeah. Now, the one thing about it is the Bills' offense didn't turn it over. They almost never turned it over, just to exaggerate to make the point. That's one positive that the Bills did. Everything else, they were subpar.
They ran the ball well. They weren't subpar running the ball.
But they ran the ball well because they ran it more than anybody else in the National Football League because they couldn't throw it.
But they were good at running the ball.
They had to be. They got more opportunities because their defense got turnovers and they couldn't throw the football. What else were they going
to
do?
Right. Except what's it got to do with the defense? What's that have to do with the defense?
This year, if they do any of that stuff better, which by all accounts, you and I both think they're going
to
do some of, if not all of those things
better.
That's going to help a defense stay off the field, be fresher, and have less opportunities to have to defend.
Okay. I hope you're right. That's the way it's supposed to work.
That is the last needle on the haystack of evidence that I think they're going to be in a top 10 defense.
Let's take a call from Jose in Buffalo.
You're laughing when you're taking Jose's call.
That's how you're doing.
Hi, Jose.
Hi, Jose.
Hey, Tasker, listen. I am 150,000% on your bandwagon here because this argument with my buddies through the whole offseason, there is no way we cannot be a top 10 defense because our offense is going to be – I mean, I think light years ahead of it, you know what I mean? Because if you think about it, too, we're going to be throwing the ball. We got it doesn't matter who's in quarterback, but I think A.J. McCarron knows how to throw the ball. He's played in the NFL. He had A.J. Green. You know, he had some weapons in Cincinnati, but he has a couple good weapons here. You know, we got Calvin Benjamin, where we know he's able to throw the red zone. You know, it's just our offense is going to be a light years better, and that just takes all the pressure off the defense. Defense top 10, upgraded in every position, I believe. Avante Davis is a way better upgrade than E.J. Gaines, I believe. Our linebackers are awesome. And then, come on, the front. Now you got to look at it this way, too. Jerry Hughes is not going to see double teams anymore. Shaq Lawson is probably not going to see double teams. And, you know, them outside guys, because we got a little too late. Because let's face it, when we lost whatchamacallit, what's his name?
Marcel Darius.
It's in the middle. He was eating double teams up like crazy. And that's why them guys were getting sacks.
Jose, which linebackers are awesome, do you think?
Me, personally, Tremaine Edmonds is a freak of nature. I believe he's I said it since day one when we got him. He's going to be defensive rookie of the year. I don't care what anybody says because this Dermic defense, he's going to shine.
I hope so. Yeah, I hope you're right. He hadn't stepped on the field yet in the game. I hope you're right.
I just seen tape. I look at him in college. He's a freak. And then Milano being a second year in this defense, Milano's going to shine. You know, I just think. And then Humber, you know, Humber's more of a situational player. Bring him in. You still got Lorenzo. I mean, we're okay. Maybe one more linebacker, we should be okay. But other than that, And look at it this way. Our back end, Trey White, second year, Jordan Poyer, Micah Hyde. We got better.
All right, yeah. I hear you, Jose.
I think they got better, too.
I hear you. And I
Top 10, Murph. You heard it here.
I heard it here and I heard it there.
Yeah, all right.
Steve's going. Thanks, Jose. We're going to take a break. We're going to talk more about this. Where will the Bills' defense rank in 2018? They were 26 last year. Do you see him as a top 10 like Steve does and like Jose does? Give us a call. Let's discuss. Also, some special teams talk when we return. We're just getting started here. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker here.
A couple of outfielders.
One Bills Drive.
Can't figure out who
that's
did.
Right. I got it. You take it. As we get back, we're talking about the Bills' defense on our Twitter poll. How good do you think they'll be? They were 18th in the overall in points allowed last year, 26th overall, 31st in sacks. It's my opinion that they're going to get a lot better this year, maybe even a top 10 defense. John thinks they will improve, but maybe into the top 15, top 20
kind of thing.
Maybe improve from 18th overall in points allowed, maybe get into the top 15. I think it's going to be a much more significant improvement than that, given their free agents that they signed, and also Tremaine Edmonds is going to – I guess, you know, a lot of us, and I guess when you really dissect it, a lot of us have a lot of faith in a rookie middle linebacker making a big difference.
Look, I know he's a great pick.
Yeah, he's a great pick.
And he looks great in a week's worth of rookie workouts with rookies.
You just don't appreciate the beauty of that.
He looks fine. He looks really good.
Fine.
He does.
Listen, if I looked that fine, I wouldn't be working on the radio.
Hasn't stepped on the field in an NFL game yet. So I love the pick. I love what the potential. I'm not ready to say he's awesome yet. You got to play a little bit before you can be awesome in the
NFL. I get it. Yeah, you're right, and I agree. There's no question about it. But by the same token, I think he's the right player at the right spot,
absolutely,
in the right defense with the right people around him. And he's in a system. And I read this in a couple of places on the lead up to the draft, or just after the draft, when the Bills picked Tremaine Edmonds. He's the perfect fit for the defense that the Bills run. It's the perfect slot. In a need-based situation, you got a great, big, tall, fat, very fast linebacker in a defense that you need a really fast, tall, athletic middle linebacker. It's a perfect fit, and that's a lot of what a lot of people said about the Bills draft. They got, not only did they get guys, they got guys that fit perfectly into what they're going to ask them to do. So I think I'm sold on that idea.
A couple of tweets on this. Slightly biased Bills fan tweets in this. I actually really like the defense this year. It'll be interesting to see how the linebackers mesh with Milano, Edmonds, and Alexander. But the D-line looks really strong with a lot of quality players, and we all know what the backfield is capable of. And this one is good, too. Bills and Mets fan tweets in. Middle of the pack, he thinks, where will they rank? He says middle of the pack and rising. Maybe the best secondary in the league. The line and linebackers will be improved. Second year in a new stable system, we'll see the Bills' defense take a huge step forward. Top 5 to 7 defense by season's end.
That would be a dream, man, if they could be that good too. But by season's end, that means, you know, there is, and it is a long season. So you think about what that tweet just said, the Bills and Mets fan. By season's end, they're going to be a top 5 or 7 defense. That doesn't necessarily mean that when you take the whole season as a whole that they're going to be one of those teams that's a top 10 defense. But by the season, maybe they'll be playing like it. I don't know if I can still take credit for getting it right even.
Season's end is what we're talking about.
Right. So it's got to encompass all 16 games, though, too. You can't go back and throw out, you know, A, B, and C game. It all counts. So, yeah, there's no question, too. And I think when you look at it that way where by season's end they're going to be a top 5 or 7 defense, I would say, yeah, there's a lot of reason to think, and I've seen so many of these teams play. I've seen all of them play at one point or another. There's going to be moments when there's not going to be a better defense in the league. They're going to play that, you know what I mean? Yeah. There's going to be moments like that where, wow, our guys are really good. But then there's going to be other games like, you know, you get into a game like they had last year here in Buffalo against New Orleans where it's like – it's like they haven't even met each other before.
Disastrous.
Right? It's disastrous.
Well, yeah.
So it's going to be a roller coaster, as it always is. They're going to be good games and bad games. But I think that's right. I think the top end of this defense is going to be much more, much higher than it was a year ago.
Well, looking at the 2018 schedule, you look at, say, the first 5 or 6 games, which opponents give you pause when you think about the Buffalo defense? And I think it's pretty obvious. Weeks 3 and 4 at Minnesota, at Green Bay. Those would be the two biggest challenges the Buffalo defense will face early, right? At Baltimore, at the Chargers,
Well,
but at
the
Minnesota,
Chargers,
at Green Bay.
Are they at Chargers or Chargers?
No,
here?
Chargers are here, home
right.
opener.
See, that's – and here's the
they
thing.
They don't scare me.
Why not? Philip Rivers doesn't scare you?
No,
Keenan Allen doesn't scare you?
No. They're good. They're okay, but no. But the
point
I'm
really
making
good
is
at the end of last year.
Minnesota and Green Bay are the two teams in the front third of the schedule when you're like, okay, that's when the defense will be up. We'll probably know after the Green Bay game if they have a chance to be a top 10 defense, right? After they face Minnesota and Green Bay back-to-back weeks?
Yeah, but there's a lot of stuff you're not going to know. If everything's all equal, yeah, sure. That first month of the season, that kind of does give you your identity, no question about it.
Middle third of the season.
Tennessee, Houston, Indianapolis, and then New England.
New England and Chicago, to me, are the two biggest challenges for the Buffalo defense in the middle third of the season until the bye. Well, New England is New England, and I think Chicago has some firepower. I think they'll be kind of tough to stop.
Well, Mitch, we'll have an idea about how good Mitch Trubisky is going to be in Chicago by that time. Yeah. And I'll tell you, I've heard, you know, we talked about it on the show at another time, where I saw Mitch Trubisky last year, and maybe one of his first starts, if not his first start for John Fox, I liked him. I thought, wow, he's – now, in a production meeting, he didn't blow my socks off, but on the field, he was much better. On his field, he was much, much better than that. He seemed confident, threw the football well, and gave his team a chance to win. I can't even remember if they actually won the game or who they were playing last year, because it was so long ago. But I was impressed with his play. I remember that.
And then down the stretch of the season, I think there's not really an offense that I think would scare you, other than a game at New England. You're talking about the Jets twice. You're talking about New England. You're talking about Miami twice. The Lions. So,
last six are division games.
Your point about this defense, I think they will have a strong finish, provided they're healthy, obviously. But when you look at their opponents, who scares you in that group? After the bye week, especially.
And you got to think that's when they're going to shift gears. And when you get to November 25th, you start playing Jacksonville, Miami, the Jets, and the Lions. You got to think you're going to have to hold those teams, or maybe be able to hold them, at least. Sitting here not knowing anything, like we don't know anything. You got to hold those teams less than 15 points. I think you got a chance to do that with the way they look now. And I don't know whether Tannehill is going to come back without Jarvis Landry and be able to light it up after coming off a knee injury and his best player's not there anymore. That'll be interesting.
The Bills, and we're talking about Bills defense, where it will rank, and I'm just thinking and looking back to last year, they were so strong defensively at the start of the year, right? They gave up 12 points to the Jets, gave up 9 points to Carolina, and lost.
Yeah.
They gave up 16 points to Denver, 17 at Atlanta, and then the points started coming at Cincinnati. The Bengals got 20, but even that wasn't outrageous. But they started out so strong defensively last year. They may finish that way this year on defense, given the opponents are up against.
They might, and like I told you last year, I said this in the last segment, Tyrod had 14 games, 7 of them he threw for 200 or less, and 7 of them he threw for 200 or more. And you just got to think that, I pulled up AJ McCarron's numbers. This is 2015 when he was playing with the Cincinnati Bengals. He had a couple of mop up starts where he came in and was 1 for 1 and 2 for 3. Okay, so you throw those out. And he started against Pittsburgh, San Francisco, Denver, and Baltimore. He completed 66% of his passes, almost 67% of his passes against Cleveland, 69% of his passes, 68.8, against Pittsburgh, 71% of his passes against San Francisco, 63% of his passes against that Denver defense in 2015. And then Baltimore, 63% of his passes. That's pretty good. He threw for multiple touchdowns in half the games he started, and at least one touchdown in every game he started. And that's the guy who's going to be pulling your trigger. I think he's going to – that's a guy that completes 65% of his passes on average and gives you a chance to win by getting at least a touchdown a game. He averages two a game. So to me, that's an upgrade from a guy who throws for less than 200 yards half the time he's on the field. That's going to help this team play better defensively, offensively. They're going to score more points. Their point differential, their pass rush is going to be more a factor because teams won't be able to run it because they're going to have to catch up. I just think there's a lot of reasons to think this defense is going to get a little more help this year. And with the additions and all the extra stuff we've been talking about, I think there's a lot of improvement, at least on paper.
I think they'll improve too. A tweet from Jess Tabor says, Murph, have some faith in our Bills. Well, at least the defensive side.
Yeah, Murph, at least sip the Kool-Aid. You don't have to, just give it the Heisman.
I think they're going
to
get better. What am I going to tell you? I think they're going to get better. I don't know if they're going to be top 10. Steve thinks they'll be top 10. I hope they are.
I like to say I know they're going to be. But Well, hey, every team's got questions.
Yeah.
How many questions the Seattle Seahawks have right now?
I don't pay attention to them. I got questions about the Bills' defense. Here's a couple other tweets. Jonathan Reddy says they'll finish middle of the pack, 11 through 15. Crypto Convict tweets, and if we could move to the top 15, I'd be happy. Shows progress. I'd really like to see Shaq Lawson take a big step this year. No kidding, right? No kidding.
Yeah, Shaq Lawson.
They need
this is a year for
pick.
Shaq Lawson. He's got the ability to do it. He came out of Clemson as a pass rusher in a 4-3 defense and played well for them. I'd like to know where he's been and where he's going to head to. I'd like to see his top end this year. And I'm sure he's sitting there thinking the same thing. You know, that's the kind of guy he is.
And I'm sure there are a couple others, including McDermott and Leslie Frazier and Brandon Bean, who'd like to see him hit top end sooner rather than later. You got to believe that the clock is ticking.
Absolutely,
a little bit, right?
Absolutely. You got it. You're gonna have to play well. And I don't think, and let's face it, a guy like Shaq Lawson, and I don't put too much faith in this, but this is a team that's trying to get better. And if they've made the personnel moves in the past that we've all seen them make, you think a first round draft pick is gonna feel safe about?
No, he shouldn't.
You don't think this coaching staff and this front office would take a guy like Eddie Yarbrough over a guy like Shaq Lawson if he's playing better? There's absolutely no question they'll do that. Right. They're not caught up in draft position, free agents, how much money you make as opposed to this guy. If one of you's playing better, the one who's playing better, no matter what the circumstance, is going to go in, and that's why. You got to be highly motivated if you're a guy like Shaq Lawson coming in, trying to, you know, stay on this team and have a really nice career.
You and I got
to your second contract.
You and I got into a mini argument this morning about this, but I truly believe Shaq Lawson does not get the benefit of the doubt. He came from a previous regime, first rounder, does not get the benefit of the doubt. If they have questions about him and they're measuring his effectiveness, his potential contributions versus somebody that they brought in. Shaq Lawson does not get the benefit of the doubt.
Well,
I believe that.
I don't think it's that he's. I don't think it's because he was from another regime or because those guys.
I think that's why he does not get the benefit of the doubt. I'm not saying they cut him because of that, but I'm saying he does not get, an extra look.
To me,
let's say
he gets the benefit of the doubt that he earns.
Yeah,
just like everybody else. I don't think him being a holdover from the last coaching staff, last regime, is going to be a plus or minus. I think you got to earn it every day up here in this building, I think, these days. And that's the way it should be, no question about it. But, you know, we all know it's not always that way.
All right, special teams talk coming up when we return. Stick around for that. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. We're presented by Kaleida Health, John Murphy and Steve Tasker on Buffalo Bills Radio. On a beautiful day in Orchard Park, John Murphy, Steve Tasker coming to you live from One Bills Drive with One Bills Live. Coming up at 1, Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report. He has some thoughts on the Buffalo defense, in particular Tremaine Edmonds and some of the other draft picks. 1:30, Matt Milano joins us. 2 o'clock, Lorenzo Alexander. Shifting away from defense for a moment, Steve. Rick Gosselin has been a guest on the show. I've known him for years. You know him pretty well. He is a reporter for the Dallas Morning News. And before that, he was in Kansas City. He has made it his specialty to cover special teams in the NFL, has the year-end special teams rankings every year. And you talked to him a week or two ago, last week?
It was 2 weeks ago, and we did a little five-game podcast of important games to whoever.
Rick has come up with the all-time special teams unit in NFL history. And Steve is on there, first team for coverage, the all-time special teams unit in National Football League history. Congratulations, Steve. You're an all-timer on coverage.
That's awesome. And I'll tell you what, it's fun for me because this came out, and of course, you know, I clicked on it because I wanted to see it, right?
Absolutely.
So I went down a list, and it was so fun because so many guys on this list I know, not just as what he did was, this is the first 11 that we put on here. Mark Pike is on second team of this list, but he put a list of 53 guys together, an entire roster made up all entirely of special teams guys.
He's got 22, so it's like an offensive team and a defensive
team. And it is absolutely fantastic to go down through it because there's so many guys who I know and have met, and also guys I played against who were of my era, and also guys who were before or way after. And it was really cool to read down the list of names because I remember a ton of them.
Can I run some of these names by you?
Sure.
It was Nolan Cromwell from your hometown, did I read?
No, he said that. Cromwell was from Ransom, Kansas, which Ransom, Kansas is the size of your local gas station. That is it. I'm telling you that. And now my town, Leota, Kansas, is much more of a metropolis. There was like 2,000 people in our county.
Oh,
Not in our town, in our county.
Oh.
And that, so we were kind of a metropolis compared to Nolan Cromwell. But let me tell you something, Nolan Cromwell was a phenomenal
great
athlete.
Played great
quarterback at KU.
KU. Love that guy.
He was a four, he won, listen to this. So when I'm growing up, my oldest brother was Nolan Cromwell's age. And the year my brother was in state track meet, Nolan Cromwell won four gold medals at that meet. Inspired me, truly. And when I was a senior, I did the same thing.
Wow.
I won four gold medals at the state track meet like he did. And I remember, too, I lined up against him one time in the preseason as a rookie. I mean, I was like, this is awesome.
He was a, you know? He was a Kansas icon, right?
Yeah, he still is. He was an NFL coach for years and years, too, with the Green Bay Packers. Won a world championship with those guys. I was with Seattle Seahawks for a number of years. He's a great player.
Another name on that list that I recognize, and I met long snapper Steve Diassi. Played with the Giants. He's Fred Smirnless's buddy. He owns
they're on the radio station. They go to a restaurant up there together. I've met him. He's a wonderful guy.
Snapper?
Yes, he is. Yeah, he was really good. Really good. Now, there are some other guys that you could put on that list, but it's a little bit of an esoteric niche.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of intricacies.
I always thought Adam Lingner was
extremely well. I remember Adam got a game ball one time because he had like 12 snaps, punt and short snaps, that were perfect. You know, he never missed a single one, and it was, you know, huge in our game. And so those guys are huge, and a lot of people don't appreciate them. Dale Hellestray was a long snapper for us for a minute, and he went and played in four Super Bowls for Dallas. In fact, he's the guy that snapped it when I blocked a punt in the Super Bowl against those guys. Matthew Slater.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about
who
him.
last year became the second player besides me who got to seven Pro Bowls. And
he's that good, isn't he?
He's pretty good, yeah. I watched him a couple, 3 years ago, and I love watching him because I could really tell he put a lot of thought into what he did. You know, he knew what he was doing, and when you put a lot of thought into it, it becomes second nature. So some of the stuff he was doing was really sharp, but you had to thought. You know what I mean? I just appreciated the way he played and the way he looked. Michael Bates is another guy that doesn't get enough credit. Albert Shelley, I played against. He was a great Atlanta Falcons. Of course, at Orchard Park here, Ron Wolfley.
Yeah.
Grew up here, played in Orchard Park High School. I know Ron. I know the Wolf.
He does radio. Well.
Does radio in Arizona. I've been on his show a number of times. Larry Izzo's now a coach. Benny Thompson was in the Pro Bowl for the New York Giants the same year we played them in Super Bowl 25. He was a great player. No, I'm sorry, not Benny Thompson. Renee Thompson down, who was there. And Bill Bates, of course, maybe. Bill Bates and maybe Mossy Tatupu, guys like that. Those guys were the reason. I think Bill, more than anything, not only because he was a great player, but also because he played on the Cowboys. His play forced the league to consider putting special teams in the Pro Bowl. And I thought that is, as much as anything, was the first time special teams players began to be appreciated. So Bill Bates, I think all of us on this list owe Bill a vote of thanks. Hank Bauer is a radio analyst for the San Diego Chargers.
A lot of radio guys, when you look at it.
Yeah, I got a chance to – Gale Sayers, the kickoff returner. Devin Hester, of course, is on this list. And then you got Ted Hendricks as an interior kick blocker. Matt Blair as an interior kick blocker. And then Albert Lewis. A lot of people don't remember Albert Lewis as a phenomenal cornerback.
Yeah.
He was like 6'3 and a half and just as slippery as an eel. And he could slip through, and he blocked a ton of kicks off the edge in his day, punts and kicks. And then Eddie Metter, who was back way back in the day. I never met him. Yeah. Yeah, but all these guys, it's fun to go back and look. Of course, Morton Anderson, Ray Guy, Adam Vinatieri.
Steve Tasker, part of Rick Gosselin's all-time special teams unit. Some of those guys, Albert Lewis, you made me think about him. Some of those guys made their money playing offense or defense.
Yeah, Ted Hendricks.
Yeah, Ted Hendricks.
Of course, he was
6'8",
so he could interior block.
Do guys who just focus on teams, and maybe that's a more recent development, do they have an edge, do you think, in excelling on special teams?
Well, I think that's the way the league is. You have to. You have to be a guy who, you know, can have a coach come up and pat you on the shoulder and says, hey, you're a pretty good receiver, but you have no shot. You know, if you want to make this team, it's going to be covering kicks. Or, you know, somebody gives you that, or you kind of learn it on your own where, you know, you're going to have to play special teams to do it. Now there's spots for those guys.
Right.
I tell people the golden era of special teams was after the rosters got up to 45 on game day, and then there was no salary cap. When the salary cap came in, now the guys you can still have some special teams guys, but now it's not quite the same as it was before the salary cap.
Did somebody at Houston look at you as a special teamer, or did Marv do that?
No, I was a kick returner then.
Right.
You know, I was a fast kid then, and and played some receiver, backup receiver, and I was just actually the week I got picked up in Buffalo, they were going to activate me to play wide out.
Really?
And start as a slot receiver. And then Marv Levy and the Bills picked me up that week on Thursday night, and I ended up covering kicks and returning kicks.
Part of that was you came to a team that had pretty good talent at receiver, right? Andre
Reed. Yeah, Andre Reed, Chris Burkett, second-round draft pick.
Lofton was
Tremaine
year, Ed, year after.
He was 3 years after that. But, yeah, they didn't look at me as a receiver. I was a kick returner, special teams coverage guy. And I was, okay.
And the rest is history.
Yes, ancient at this point. Yeah.
But, Steve, congratulations.
Rick it was Dawson's
fun. All-time special teams unit, Steve Tasker there on it.
Yeah, and it was fun, too. If you get a chance, you might go listen to that. For Bills fans, not just anybody, because there are five games about the Buffalo Bills that a lot of people will remember. Of course, a couple of Super Bowls. And
comeback game.
And the comeback game, yeah. And some other games that I mentioned because they led up to those two.
And that's on Rick's website, Talk of Fame Network, I think the website
is. Yeah, he's one of the Hall of Fame voters. Yep. And spend some time on special teams.
Yep. All right. We got more to come. When we come back, next hour is going to be busy. We've got Matt Milano, Bills linebacker, joining us at 1:30. And Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report standing by to join us next. Come on back for that. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. The update comes from One Bills Drive, where it's the end of another week of off-season conditioning for Bills veterans. They're in phase two. They'll do it again Monday and then start organized team activity on Tuesday. OTAs, meaning the Bills can then go to offense versus defense, 7-on-7, 9-on-7, and 11-on-11, no contact. Bills rookies stick around tomorrow for the rookie development program. Bills reportedly hosting a couple of veterans this week. Wide receiver Russell Shepard and defensive end Ryan Russell reportedly here being assessed for possible roster moves. Stay tuned. Cleveland Browns are going to appear on HBO's Hard Knocks series this summer, according to HBO. It'll be the first time the Browns will appear on the series, airing for the 13th year. The Browns were 0-16 last year, have not been to the playoffs since 2002, and haven't won more than 5 wins in 10 of the last 12 seasons. But they do have the number one overall pick, quarterback Baker Mayfield, and the Browns will be on Hard Knocks. We'll talk more about that as the show moves along. Several proposed rules changes are going before owners next week at the spring meetings in Atlanta. It includes proposed kickoff rules changes. We'll talk with Lorenzo Alexander a little bit later on in the show about some of that. Hockey Stanley Cup playoffs tonight. It is another game, Game 4 in the Eastern Conference Finals, Tampa Bay at Washington. Caps lead that series 2-1. Last night, the Vegas Golden Knights beat Winnipeg 4-2 in Game 3 of that series, and the Knights lead the series now 2-1. That series picks up again on Friday night. And the NBA playoffs get a couple of days off after last night's game. Golden State at Houston last night, and the Rockets won it 127-105, ties up the series at 1-1 apiece. Next game is the Eastern Conference Finals. It'll be Game 3 of the Boston-Cleveland series. That's coming up Saturday night, 8:30 p.m., and the Boston Celtics lead that series 2-0. Houston-Golden State series resumes on Sunday at 8 p.m. And that is the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker in our One Buffalo studio on a beautiful day in Orchard Park, talking Bills football with you, Bills football in the NFL. And joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, a guy who writes a lot about the NFL. He is the Bleacher Report NFL writer, former SI.com contributing writer. He's been covering the NFL for the last 17 years. Happy to have Doug Farrar on the line with us. Doug, it's John Murphy and Steve Tasker here in Buffalo. Thanks for joining us.
How's it going, guys?
Good. Hey, Doug, I got to tell you, you are a great follow on Twitter. Not just because of your football stuff, too. Your political stuff is always pretty interesting, too. Many interesting takes from you on a variety of topics.
Well, thanks. I get the occasional stick-to-sports replies.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
I hope people appreciate the diversity, and if they don't, well, I don't know what to tell you.
You can always mute them.
Yeah, mute. I was telling Steve about the beauty of the Twitter mute. It's better than a block.
The mute button is one of the greatest inventions of the new millennium.
There you go.
Because they don't know they're getting muted.
That's exactly right.
It's fantastic.
Just yelling into that vacuum, guys. Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, you're talking to two guys who know what that's about. So
We do a little yelling into we yell into the vacuum ourselves once in a while.
There you go.
So, Doug, we were talking about, obviously we're all wrapped up in the Buffalo Bills here, and you had an article come out, a couple of good ones, actually, and we're talking about the one that where you above all the other rookies in there. And let's face it, there were some really talented rookies in this draft class, and a lot of them taken very high up. But you think Tremaine Edmonds has a real chance to make some waves as Defensive Rookie of the Year?
I do, and I look at it. I look at a few things when, you know, no matter how talented a player is coming out of college, and you guys know this, that the scheme fit in the NFL is so important. And Edmonds makes that easier because he can do so many things. He can play inside linebacker, he can play outside linebacker. This is both in coverage, which I think is one of his more underrated attributes. You know, and I think he has – he didn't really do this in college. He didn't rush off the edge. But I think he has amazing potential as a situational edge rusher. If the Bills, I assume with Frazier, they're going to run kind of a 4-3, 4-2-5 kind of thing. But if they want to bring an extra guy up, and the Seahawks did this Julian Peterson when they had him in back in the 2000s, they would bring him up. And really, Peterson is the only player I can comp Edmonds to, because the other thing I look at with him is the athleticism. It's just, he's a freak. 6'5", 253 pounds. But he plays as fast as the linebackers of today, most of whom average between 225 and 230, maybe 6'1", 6'2", you know, your Quan Alexanders and such. Well, he plays that fast, but he's got the size of a defensive end. And that makes it, you know, and then you look at experience. He just turned 20. He was drafted when he was 19. The athletic potential is off the charts, and really – with McDermott as the head coach, with his defensive experience, with that coaching staff, I just think it's a perfect situation for him. They had him calling the plays in the first mini camp I read.
Yep.
So they want him on a fast track, and I think he's ready for it.
Hey, Doug, many people thought that Roquan Smith was the best linebacker in the draft. He's a very good linebacker. He went ahead of Tremaine Edmonds in the draft, but I'm getting the sense from around here, the decision makers around here, that this is the guy they wanted. They would have chosen him even if Roquan Smith had been available there in the middle of the first round.
I think Roquan Smith is the most aware linebacker I've seen in college since I watched Luke Kuechly come out of Boston College. He's a tremendous player. And he has a perfect scheme fit in Chicago with Vic Fangio's defense. He's going to be amazing. Then again, you know, I mean, he struggles against the run at times. He's maybe more a coverage guy and a sideline-to-sideline guy than what Edmonds can do. And I think I go back to the athletic potential, and I think the entire Bills staff, I think they're looking at this guy going, he's not raw clay. I mean, he does things very well. But, again, he's only 20 years old. There are things he has to learn. If you want to make him an edge rusher, you have to teach him hand movement. You have to teach him an inside counter. You have to teach him all these things. But, I didn't fault the Browns, for example, for taking Denzel Ward number 4. Bradley Chubb went higher than I thought. But, I mean, if I'm looking at a defensive player in this draft class, I can't see one with more athletic potential that we have not yet seen than Tremaine Edmonds. And that's always a dicey thing with athletic potential, but he's shown enough. I mean, the stuff he does run-stopping from sideline to sideline for his size, I don't know that I've seen a linebacker that big play that fast on a consistent basis.
The size is considerable, and the one thing, Steve, you probably we both had the same reaction watching the rookie minicamp last week, and even some of this week's conditioning workouts. Tremaine Edmonds towers over all the other linebackers. You don't see a linebacker that tall, that big anymore.
Yeah, and again, and I think Lorenzo Alexander is kind of a similar player. He gets a lot of his sacks, as you guys know. He does rush off the edge, but he gets a lot of his sacks reading gaps between the tackles. And, you know, sacks, hits, hurries, all that stuff. He's very, very good at playing, whether it's, you know, left or right linebacker in a nickel or maybe a will in a 4-3. He's really good at that. And I think Tremaine Edmonds does the same thing. And at that point, it doesn't matter, you know, leverage and this and that. He's a gap mover. He sees gaps on the defensive side as a running back would on the offensive side. So the one thing I would say about him that he may run into trouble with, either as an edge rusher or as an inside linebacker, is just the leverage stuff, because he's going to be facing stronger guys.
Yeah.
and he may have to, you know, he may have to get into the whole low man wins thing. But as far as just that terrific speed and quickness and through the hole and bam, there he is. I mean, he had a play against Oklahoma State, and he missed the tackle, so the running back gained extra yards. But he was on the right side of the field, very fast running back going to the other side of the field, and he actually caught up to him. And you see a lot of plays like that. There was one play against Pitt where he just knifed through the entire offense and created losses. He was great on a goal line stand against Clemson. I mean, it just shows up over and over again. So you can see, even with a Roquan Smith or whoever, that this guy, you know, he can be a real table setter for any defense.
Yeah, one of the guys, and here we all have kind of marveled at the way he kind of stands out athletically and also with his stature as how tall he is. But one of the things that in our lead up to the draft, we were looking around thinking that maybe the best defender in the draft was Bradley Chubb, who went to Denver, and that seems to be almost a perfect fit for him, going in with a Von Miller on one side, Bradley Chubb coming off the edge. Not only that, he could watch Von Miller and learn how a smaller guy rushes and rushes very well and add that to his repertoire as a young defensive lineman and really have a good year. Well, how do you see Bradley Chubb, who is a guy everybody thought was going to be a high pick, but you yourself thought, maybe not so much?
It's not that I was low on him. I didn't see a top five talent. I didn't necessarily always see blistering speed off the edge. There were times when he kind of disappeared on, you know, multiple consecutive plays on tape. They could use him in a lot of different ways. If they want, like, you know, if they're going to go with the old Wade Phillips thing, which they have the personnel to do, which is you run a 5-2-1 gap on your base downs, and then you go to like a 4-2-5 nickel, which is something that's pretty frequently done in the NFL these days. In a 5-2 or a 4-3 in your base, he can come off the edge. I think he has the size to slip inside as a 5 technique or a 4-eye on passing downs, where he's rushing the passer from the inside. If I'm looking at a top five talent, I want to see something where my eyes get wide. And I guess I didn't get wide-eyed enough at Bradley Chubb in my own tape study, where I thought, well, geez, he just kind of transcends everyone around him.
Yeah. With Doug Farrar from Bleacher Report, NFL writer for Bleacher Report. He's on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with us. Doug, as we said, Tremaine Edmonds, you think, has the best chance to be Defensive Rookie of the Year. You think Arizona quarterback Josh Rosen has a good chance to be Offensive Rookie of the Year. What do you see there?
I do, and with Rosen, I mean, we've all heard about the personality stuff. I think a lot of it is that he is a very, very smart kid. He's a very independent thinker. His coaches are going to have to challenge him. So the teams that passed on him probably did him a favor, because if they're not aligned with the player's personality, that's never going to work, especially at quarterback, where so much of it is mental, so much of it is emotional. It's you know, that your alignment between your quarterback and your primary offensive coach, the passive game coach, that's almost a spiritual connection. Not to get, you know, all weird here, but it is.
Yeah, I get you. You're right.
And you look at Mike McCoy, the Cardinals' new offensive coordinator. This is the guy, he got the San Diego job because he was the one guy in the NFL who could create an offense in which Tim Tebow looked like sort of an NFL quarterback. And it was, you know, simple first read open stuff. He came back to Denver last year and presided over that quarterback disaster. And now he has Josh Rosen, who I think is the best draft prospect quarterback I've seen since Carson Wentz. He is, to me, the most – and when I say talent, I mean Lamar Jackson has more athletic upside, and I love Lamar Jackson's tape. But as far as this guy is ready to play soon – I think Rosen has the most and the best attributes. He sees the field far better than any quarterback in this class.
Is that the reason you think he's going to play?
Yes. Well, there are many reasons. He's advanced enough to do it. You got Sam Bradford, who in my mind is a top five quarterback when he's healthy, but he's never healthy. And then you have Mike Glennon. And if you watch Mike Glennon with the Bears, no.
Right.
Sorry.
Right, I get you.
Not going to happen. Rosen, you know, he's as NFL ready as you're going to get for a guy coming out of college. And I think in that offense, I think McCoy is a guy who will challenge Rosen in the right way. I think it's a perfect fit.
Speaking of perfect fits, Doug, you wrote a really extensive piece on the right fit, finding solutions for biggest remaining holes for each team. For the Bills, you think they might have a spot for Jarry Evans, a 34, soon to be 35-year-old offensive lineman. Tell us about that and why Jarry Evans might be a good pickup for the Bills at this point.
Well, you know, back in his peak, Evans was, you know, a guy who could get up to safety level. He was one of the more mobile guards I'd ever seen. Obviously, with Incognito, and check me, because it's a different week. Has he unretired yet or retired again?
He's still retired.
He's still retired.
Yeah, he's going to stay that way.
There's no coming back now.
Yeah, pulling a farm, as they say.
Yeah.
you know, in this particular scheme, I think Evans would fit well. He's not as quick as he used to be, but with the Packers, he showed very powerful at the point of attack. Can still handle stunts and crosses and line games and things like that. I don't think he plays at an all-pro level anymore, but I also think the Bills, with their current offensive line, they kind of have to spackle at this point. And one of the ways you spackle intelligently with your personnel, you get guys who maybe aren't, you know, the buzz of the NFL right now, but they fit your scheme. And I think this is a team that wants to go its power and quickness. It's, you know, if there's some zone, there's some power counter trap. I think Evans is a guy who's seen everything. I think he'd be a really good fit in that particular line.
Did you say spackle? Isn't that something my wife spackle. Wants me to do under the bathroom tiles? Or something? Is that what you
Probably.
Mean?
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Spackling. Yeah. It's like putty that you put in between the tiles in your bathroom.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Sometimes
okay.
you got to spackle your roster.
Spackle your roster.
I like that. Go down to Home Depot and get a veteran guard.
Listen, Doug, you're exactly right. That's exactly what I think Evans would be. He's 35 years old. If they needed a stopgap guy or even a depth guy for 1 year and maybe bring him back to make sure that they had that covered for a second year, probably cut him next training camp, that's the kind of guy you'd want. He's got a lot of ability. A little bit. He's still 35 years old, but if you want a guy that can give you a little something in the offensive line room, and maybe, and I don't know if he could start 16 games, but even if he couldn't, he'd be a valuable guy in your room and also to give you some spot duty. So I think that spackling is a perfect analogy.
Plus, he's seen every offense.
Yeah. There you go. You know, exactly. And every defensive front.
Complicated Saints offense. You can help younger, you know, younger guards as they come along. He was in Seattle for like 12 minutes, so I was sort of familiar with him from that time. Seems like a good guy, a guy who would help younger
sure.
players.
Yeah.
It would be a good fit for a team that needs some offensive line help like right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Hey, Doug, thanks for this. Thanks for joining us today. Keep up the good work. We appreciate it.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Thank you. Doug Farrar, Bleacher Report NFL writer, former contributing writer at SI.com. He joined us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. Spackling your offensive line, filling in the cracks, filling in the holes. I guess I knew what he meant. I've just never heard anybody say, we got to spackle this up.
You spackle when you don't have any bricks.
Yeah, right.
Back in the wall. Yeah, you're right. But it is a good analogy. Jarry Evans was an excellent player for all of his career. He has seen a lot of football. He was a very athletic guard, but he's going to be 35. And, you know, if you want to bring him in for a one-year deal and have him back some guys up, I think there's no question he'd be a quality guy. Maybe he would still be good enough to start at least the first half of the season. You know, as you can tell why I'm saying all this, I just don't know if he could give you a 16 full good games.
Yeah. I seem to recall some interest in
Jarry Evans. I don't have any other reason to say that other than the fact that he's old for an NFL player.
I seem to recall some interest in him a year or two ago here when he was out on the market from, I think, Rex Ryan's crew. I don't know if they brought him in for a visit or at least there was some talk about him coming here, and it didn't happen. But I can see that. I don't know if, like you said, you don't want to lean on him. You don't want to say, hey, this is your spot for the next few years. No, maybe not even 1 year, right, for a guy that age, 34,
still, 35. And, you know, the Bills are – it's not like the Bills are off the market. I mean, they're bringing in guys – I mean, they're bringing in defensive end Ryan Russell today. He was with Dallas and Tampa Bay. They're also bringing in Russell Shepard today, wide receiver from Tampa Bay and lately of Carolina. It's not like they're not looking at these guys. Those names are out there, and they're still bringing them in. And like we had Sean McDermott, he keeps telling us, we're trying to get the right 90. We're not just filling out roster spots, so maybe there's a reason they're reticent to go that direction.
We talked a little bit about Doug Farrar's contention that Josh Rosen might be the NFL's Offensive Rookie of the Year. He's getting shot out in Arizona. We had the story yesterday. Rosen is taking first-team snaps with the Arizona offense in practice, and it seems like he's trying to build his image up a little bit. He had an Instagram post that our producer, Jay Harris, came across in which he said, I mean, come on, I even look like a cardinal.
He got a profile picture, and he's got a beak like a cardinal.
Yeah.
He's making fun of his own nose. He's got a.
As your buddy Fred Smirnoff used to say, what would you rather have, $1 million or that nose full of nickels? And it all supplies.
Yeah. And he's laughing at himself, but he does listen. This is a guy that when he was he kind of looks like Aaron Rodgers in that picture, and that's who I equated him with when he was coming out in the draft. He's a guy who's got a little bit of a personality that's quirky. Aaron Rodgers has never been accused of being a buddy-buddy bro kind of guy, locker room, yuck it up kind of guy. If you look back to his early days in Green Bay where they did have one of those guys in Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers was a little bit of an outcast.
Yeah.
They still have a chilly relationship to this day because of it, because of the kind of guy, I think more so the guy that Aaron Rodgers was, more so than the guy that Brett Favre was, although Brett Favre has his eccentricities as well. But, yeah, that's the kind of guy Aaron Rodgers kind of is accused of being a little bit as well. So Josh Rosen, there's no reason to think he can't be a successful quarterback because of that personality label. But also Doug Farrar told us, and I agree with him, you just got to be ready for it. You just got to make it part of your routine that you're going to deal with it and give him what he needs to be successful. And if a team's willing to do that, I'm sure Josh Rosen does have a chance to be Rookie of the Year, especially if he starts opening day.
Yeah. The guy, the quarterback who starts first among those five first-rounders, he would have a real good chance to be Rookie of the Year, right? Look, there are five talented quarterbacks.
Right.
We know that, including the one here. But the guy who gets the start, maybe Baker Mayfield. Now, let me think about that. Playing with Cleveland, I don't know if that would be the case. You know what I'm saying?
No, listen. I think you're right. I mean, if there's four of the five guys in the first round, if all of them played 10 games, then it will come down to who played best. If one guy plays 15 games and the others play 3, 4, 6, 7 games, then you're going to have a different conversation. But it does come down to how many snaps they get and what kind of improvement they show and where they're at when they first take that snap. So it is a conversation we're going to have to wait to have.
Talking a lot about Buffalo's defense today and the level of improvement. We both think they're going to get better this year. Our Twitter poll today, following the additions they made in the offseason, the draft picks, the free agents, where will the Buffalo defense rank in 2018? Last year, the Bills ranked 26th overall in defense in the league. Where do you think they'll rank this year? On Twitter, more than half of you, 58%, say you think they'll be middle of the pack after being 26th last year. 36% of you, about a third, say they're going to be a top 10 defense. 6% say about the same. So added up, 94% of you say they're going to be better. It's just a question of how much better. I think they'll be middle of the pack. Steve thinks top 10.
Yep.
Give us a call. We'll discuss 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550.
Yeah, Marcel Wilson tweets in, the secondary is going to be elite again with the additions of the D-line and the linebacker ranks. We'll stop the run and increase the pass rush. If those pieces work with communication, we'll be the top 10. Our pass attack will make for higher points, making the other teams throw even more. And Davis is elite. Who's Davis? Oh,
Vontae.
Yeah, well, he has been in the past. We'll see if he can do it at this age, but I think they were really certainly happy to get Vontae Davis in the secondary. I think he's a great addition, and I think he fits, like we said with Tremaine Edmonds when we were talking to Doug Farrar, I think Vontae Davis fits the scheme and the type of techniques they want their corners to run. So I think he's going to be a great fit here in Buffalo.
A lot of tweets on this issue. Brian Cook tweets in very optimistically. We returned basically all of our secondary from 2017. We address our issues with the front seven in a major way and remove one or two bad games, and we'd have had a top 10 defense last year. I've got to think about that. The only question, he goes on, is a 6'4", 260-pound rookie middle linebacker with 4.45 speed. He goes, we'll be a top 10 defense for sure. I wish you could remove one or two games from last year's
schedule. Well, doesn't everybody? Doesn't every defense?
I'd like to take New Orleans off the ledger from last year And I'd like to take, you know, maybe the Chargers, a lot of assistance there with the takeaways in that game. But, sure, you can't take points off. You know, New England, take away either of the New England games and the Bills would look a lot better. Yeah, I wish you could remove those games. You can't.
Yeah, you gotta take them.
They count,
and they get what you get. You are what you deserve, particularly after the entire season's over. You are what you deserve because you got to take. You're not in it in a vacuum. There are 31 other defenses that you have to compete with and compare yourself to, and some of those guys didn't have as many games you'd like to throw out as the Bills did, and others maybe had more, but also played at a better level when they were playing well. So it's really interesting to think. It's a great conversation to have, and I'm glad we're having this Twitter poll because I'm kind of sick to death about talking about rookie quarterbacks.
Thanks for letting us know, Steve.
We've been doing that for months now.
Here's an interesting tweet from Thomas Pokigo. The Bills, he says, the Bills have set the table down the middle for years to come. The best teams build from the inside out. They will need time to gel and figure each other out. Improvement this year, then top 10 in 2019. That sounds really reasonable to me. And I like his point about setting the table in the middle. I think he's talking about Tremaine Edmonds, right?
And Harrison Phillips.
Harrison Phillips is a guy you can build around up front. And I do agree with that. You know, the team that was, what were they, 29th against the run last year? You can't have teams run like against you like that. You can't have teams run up the middle like that. Phillips will make a difference. It'll be him and others, obviously. And it'll be Tremaine Edmonds, maybe a lot by himself, trying to stop the run right at the middle. I agree with that point.
You're right. And it's it does set you up to have some success down the line. But there's no question, even if you do have a guy like Harrison Phillips who turns into an all-pro type of player, the way the league is structured now, you need like eight of those guys up there. I mean, they run four. You do. Yeah. I mean, you need for a 4-3 defense, you need eight down
linemen.
You don't
mean eight of guys like Harrison Phillips. You mean eight guys who can play.
Eight guys who can play. Harrison Phillips is going to have to come off the field to stay fresh. He'll play every second first and second down, and then he'll take the next first and second down off, and they'll run fresh guys on the field. And he'll come in for like one out of the three third downs they have on a drive, that kind of thing. So they'll work those guys in and out because that's the way the league is now. They're going to have eight guys to roll through there on the defensive line. And so, you know, to say you set yourself up with just two guys, you know, I'm going to pump the brakes on that because you're going to need a lot more help than just that.
Let's take a phone call here. We got Joel on the line from Dunkirk to talk about the Buffalo defense. Joel, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, I like how you guys were talking about the top 10 and how they might be better by the end of the season. The only thing is, you know what excited me about last year more than making the playoffs was the fact that penalties weren't called. If they were called, it's like, oh, it's going to be on the Bills. It wasn't. Right. That made me excited. And it was a cohesiveness of the team. But what worries me about the defense is not that we don't have an up-and-coming defense. It's our offense. Because the defense could be tremendous, but if we have three and outs on offense, and face it, you know, Incognito had his issue, and our center, we have a good guy to plug in place, which was no fault of his own, but if we can't bring down catches, and if we can't, if our line collapses and sacks happen, I have a funny feeling that our defense might be on the field a lot, and that's going to make them tired, and that's where I think we have a great potential defense in certain aspects, but the overall defense, I'm worried that unless our offensive game can be up there, the defense is going to suffer.
Yeah, Joel, that's the point you're making. See, when you talk about improved play in the passing game, right?
They were 31st in the league in passing, much better than that, obviously, in the running game. And the one thing they did better than anybody else, without question, was not turn it over. And that gave the defense, you know, whenever they did get a turnover, they got benefit from it because they didn't give it back. So, but that doesn't translate into points. And you've got to score points to win, and that's why defensive coaches and coordinators only care about points given up. They don't really care about yards. And it was said last year in one of the Monday night games, John Gruden, I think, when he was doing the Monday night game, one of the New England games on Monday night, he said, listen, New England give you yardage for Christmas.
Yeah.
They'll let you have it, but they do not let you in the end zone. And that's the way the league is now. It's about keeping guys off the board, and they can do anything they want offensively as long as they're not scoring points.
Let me back a couple of minutes ago, and you mentioned eight guys, defensive line up front. Let me give you these names on the roster right now. Tell me if you think these are the eight, or at least candidates for the eight. Up front, defensive line, Jerry Hughes, Starlo Tulele, Kyle Williams, Shaq Lawson, Eddie Yarborough, that's five. Harrison Phillips is six. Trent Murphy is seven. That's not bad. Now you need one more out of a group that includes Ricky Hatley, who played a little bit last year.
Did you say Kyle Williams?
I did say Kyle.
All right.
I said Kyle and Lotulelei. Adolphus is 3. Lawson is 4. Hughes is 5. Trent Murphy is 6. Harrison Phillips is 7.
Shaq Lawson is 8.
I already counted him. Lawson, Williams, Lotulelei, Hughes,
I'm
4.
I'm reading him, okay.
Washington, 5. Yarbrough, 6. Phillips, 7. Trent Murphy, 8. Is there room for another one?
Now, that time, I don't think you said Harrison Phillips, did you?
I did. Okay. That's how we got to 8.
I see. That's you're missing one every day. Yeah. So
Kenny Palapoy played
pretty
in the
close.
League. Terrence Fidei played
that's
in the
pretty,
league.
I think that's pretty close.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty close. And that, but those are the – you know, you can say those guys, and we kind of recognize some of them not so much, but they got Trent Murphy and star Lotulelei. And those two guys, I think, are upgrades.
Yeah.
And so the guys at the other end of that 8 or 9 or 10, whoever were on the team last year, those guys are off the bottom rung of the ladder. Those guys get kicked off the ladder.
Yeah, well, Yarbrough, a great kid.
Yeah,
he's going to have to play well.
He's going to have to play well. Shaq Lawson, same thing.
Yeah,
a guy who was in and out, and they didn't.
Dolphus Washington will have to step up.
Exactly. So yeah. Those are the guys that you look at and say when they bring in those two free agents, Trent Murphy and Lotulelei, somebody's gone. I mean, there's only so much room in the boat, and that's the way it goes. And which is a good thing for the Buffalo Bills because you know at the top, if you get better at the top, you know the guys who used to be the top. Move down, and now the secondary guys are better. And now, you know, it's a good place, I think, for the Buffalo Bills to be. They've really spent a lot of time and a little bit of money getting better up front. We'll see if it pays dividends.
We're going to talk about the defense with our next guest who's standing by to join us here in studio. Second-year linebacker Matt Milano, just off the field from today's offseason workout. He'll be joining us in studio when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Steve Tasker along with John Murphy back at One Bills Live. There's a shot, live shot of New Era Field on a beautiful day here in Western New York. We're being joined here in studio now by second-year linebacker Matt Milano. Matt, thanks for coming on and joining us.
Appreciate you guys having me.
Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks. You've been in how's the mini camp OTAs going?
Yeah.
How'd you fare in the dodgeball tournament yesterday?
We finished second, but our team is number one right now overall in the Bills.
Oh, so there's
in the Bills
set
games.
Teams?
Yeah, there's set teams.
All right.
Pat DeMarco. Shout out to Pat DeMarco for the draft.
And that's Iron Bills, right? All weightlifting, conditioning
yeah,
stuff?
Yeah, weightlifting, whatever conditioning, a few games incorporated in it, but just some stuff to get us kind of going
does
as a team
go right
together.
Through the like, end of the offseason stuff?
I believe it does.
Okay.
A couple more weeks of it, yep.
We were talking in the break about we've got a Twitter poll out, and it's my contention that with your experience and Vallejo's experience, and with the addition of Tremaine Edmonds and the guys up front, the free agents and everybody that they picked up, the Harrison Phillips, the draft pick,
yeah.
We think the defense is going to take a huge step forward, particularly since they got an established secondary behind you with another year of experience on the front, plus the free agents. I think you guys could jump to a top 10 defense this year. Murph is like, okay, we'll see. They're going to get improved, but I don't know if it's going to be a top 10.
No, you're going to be better.
Yeah, right. Everybody, almost everybody thinks on the poll that you're going to be better. What's your take on how good 1 year of experience makes, plus the addition of some new guys?
Yeah, definitely definitely helps a lot. You know, last year I was just kind of getting my feet underneath me, but with the addition of a couple new guys and with the experience of just learning the defense last year, that was our first year running that defense. So I think our goal right now is top 5. So we're trying
top
to be
C-mer.
Top 5 in all categories of defense.
It didn't happen yet.
I told you.
You told me what?
They know what they're doing.
I know they know what they're
listen,
doing.
Listen, and I was asking too.
I've become the bad guy here. I know they're going to be better.
Listen, too, I also told you, when this is your first off season.
Yeah.
I mean, you've been around the block once. And I told you, too, when I was a rookie, I was like I was 226 overall, right? So after, nobody's getting rich off of 220. So I went home after my first off season. I lived with my mom and dad again, right? Because I didn't need to play. It was just me, right?
Yep.
And you did the same thing.
I did.
And down in Orlando,
yep.
Right? So that's your mom and dad are cool with that?
Yeah, they were cool with that. They kind of leave me alone, let me do my thing. But, it was.
You're a professional athlete.
Good.
What are they going to say, right?
I don't know. They're parents, though, you know?
Wait.
Parents got to be parents.
Yeah.
So do you, like, you have curfew?
Nah, I don't have a curfew.
Okay, all right, cool. Yeah.
Nah, no curfew.
Right, that's kind of cool, though.
As long as they know where I'm at and right. kind of what's going on.
That's the way moms are, though. They yeah. don't care as long as you They're call. Just yeah, right. If you say, hey, I'm okay, or yeah. I'm not coming home tonight, or whatever. Yeah, I get you. And you live in Orlando, and I told you you're not a gamer, though. You're not. They leave you alone, so you're not a gamer.
I'm not a gamer.
You're not in the basement playing games.
No basements in Florida.
Oh, I guess that's right.
No.
Yeah.
Just upstairs.
Do people put their game rooms like above the garage or what? What's the typical thing in Florida?
I wish I would know, but I'm not a
– You're not a gamer.
I'm not a gamer. My
friends
aren't gamers.
EA Sports is in Orlando. I told you that.
I recently just found out.
You didn't even know that.
Didn't know it. Yeah. I'll have to stop by and check it out.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
But what did you do this offseason? What have you done so far?
I was traveling a lot. I went to New York a few times. I love New York. I'm from New York. Yeah, the city. Lower Manhattan.
You were born there, or what do you mean you're from?
Yeah, I was born in Long Island.
Oh, I didn't know that. Yeah.
And then moved to Florida when I was like 2 or 3.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So I've been there.
And you said that's not the reason you went up to Boston College.
A little bit of it. That was one of my offers, and it was close to New York, so it kind of aligned that way.
You have family in New York? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah. Okay. A bunch of family there.
Yeah.
We're one of the only ones that live in Florida right now.
Okay.
A bunch of them live in New York.
So you got a big support network up at Boston College. Do they ever come up to your games from New York? I mean, it's a quick trip.
Plenty of times,
right?
Yeah. A lot of them, uncles and stuff, so that was good.
You said you had a great experience in college.
I did. Boston's a wonderful place. Lots to do. The city's crazy. A lot of history. The weather is not the best, but you get all four seasons.
How many tickets did you have to get for the New England game last year?
A lot.
Yeah.
A lot.
I know that story as well. How many, like seriously, like 50?
It was for the Jets game, actually.
Oh, really? I guess that makes sense too.
Yeah, it was up there. I personally didn't get them.
Well, you got access to them. You didn't have to crack the wall at all.
Yeah,
did your family think you got free tickets? I mean, everybody thinks that.
Because in college, you do get free tickets.
Yeah, and plus, you get like two tickets, but you can get all your buddies' free tickets too.
Exactly.
They don't have anybody to get.
Exactly. But now it's a whole other story with tickets.
Listen, that ain't no joke either.
No, they're not.
You get a bill for 50 tickets to an NFL game.
Right?
That's a big number.
Yeah.
Yeah. Say, well, yeah, okay, yeah, I get access to tickets, but I got to pay for them.
I'll send you guys the link or something.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good deal. So tell us, how's this going? I mean, you stepped in, you got a bunch of new guys, new faces on the defense, but like you're now, compared to the draft picks and the guys up front that they just signed, you're kind of a veteran now.
Not quite yet.
Come on now, right?
I'm trying to fill that role, but I'm still going. You know, so I'm still building and got a lot more to do.
Yeah, on the TV side, they're showing the highlights from the Colt game in the snow. And you had a nice game and it ended up in a win in overtime. You guys pulled it out. What do you remember about that game in, 10 inches of snow?
It was crazy.
Making tackles.
People couldn't even run around.
Yeah.
So I think part of it was just getting your feet under you and being able to run and make a play. But, you just got to put the weather and stuff behind you. You can't really, if you're focused on that the whole time, you're not going to be successful.
Right.
So my thing was just that I'm not going to let this weather distract me.
Right.
And it seemed to help out a little bit.
Hey, Matt, the play you made, you started one game, I believe, at Cincinnati, right, in October. And then a week or so later, the Bills are home against the Raiders. And you come up with a pick, take it to the end zone. How much do you think that defined your season, maybe opened eyes, not just to Bills fans, but to coaches as to what you could be and what you could do?
Definitely. I mean, the name of the game is to make plays, see who's making plays. So that's what people remember. That's what fans remember. That's what the coaches remember. I think it was definitely a big play for me. Also, the interception in the Tampa game,
Bucks game, yeah,
I think was big, right, too. I mean,
clinched it, right?
Anytime you're making plays on the field, people recognize that. And that's what they definitely look for.
Yeah, last year we've been talking about it the whole day because we're talking about kind of the defense, how good or how much better or the same it's going to be and what the new faces are going to mean. But last year, that first part of the season, man, you guys were churning out turnovers like a machine.
Yeah.
I mean, what was the feeling like when you guys were doing that? Did you just kind of start to expect it?
It was crazy. I think it just became contagious. You know, once one guy made one, this guy was like, I want to make something happen. And everybody was just – That's our philosophy on defense, is to get the ball. Always looking for picks, interceptions, strips, sacks of that nature. So, I think it just became everybody wanted the piece of the action.
Is there anything about these OTAs, and now you've been the offseason going, you're coming back, and you see the new draft picks come in, and you remember a year ago it was you.
Yep.
Is there anything that's been like kind of comforting or something that you learned that made you saying, take a deep breath and go, oh, yeah, I see that? Because you know, you see these young guys coming in, and now you've seen everything in the NFL. You've been around it for a year.
Yep. The biggest thing for me was just learning that playbook. Once you get the playbook down, then you can be comfortable and actually make plays. You see these draft picks coming from their senior year. Their senior year, they've been in the system for a while. They've been doing it, you know what I'm saying? So they kind of are playing freely out there, not really tensed up. So when they first get here, like me, I was pretty tense coming into the walkthroughs and stuff because I didn't know the defense that well. So I think once they begin to learn the defense, they'll open up a little bit and start making plays.
Matt, you it looks like you're running with the starters, right, in the limited workouts you've had so far. And you started the last four games last season.
Yeah.
How much did that experience get you ready to be being with the ones now?
It definitely helped me out a lot. I think that was one of the reasons why I'm still in that position right now. But, yeah, it was a lot of hard work and making plays, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. And we wonder, too, you take a look at Bills practice these days. You can't help but look at Tremaine Edmonds just because of his size. What's it like playing near him, next to him? What kind of a player do you think he'll be?
It's good. I mean, just from what I've seen throughout the draft and stuff, he's an animal out there. He's big body, fills up the whole middle of the defense. So I think it's going to be interesting to see him play next year.
They're sending the defensive calls in through him right now, I think?
Yes.
How's he handling that? What's that?
Good. He's got a lot. I feel like he's further than I was when I first got here. But, I mean, we're just in walkthrough stuff right now. Right. So until it gets full speed, you can't really tell what's going on.
The thing I remember about rookie mini camps is, you know, like you said last year, you didn't even know when a walkthrough, you know, didn't even want to take a wrong step. And you ride kind of roller coaster. It's a huge roller coaster where one day you think, man, I'm gonna start. I'm going to be an all-pro. I'm going to be awesome. And then the next day you think, I don't even know what I'm doing out here.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a hard
thing. It really was.
It's hard to live through that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you just got to keep grinding it every day.
Right.
And eventually it will click for you.
Yeah.
OTA start next Tuesday, I believe.
They do.
What's that going to be like? You looking forward to that?
I'm excited. Right now we're just building our foundation as a defense, trying to lay that base level down, something to build on throughout the year. So I'm excited for it to finally begin.
Thanks for cutting out a few minutes to be with us today. We appreciate
it,
man.
Absolutely. Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Matt Milano, second-year linebacker for the Buffalo Bills. Steve and I back with more. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. I really like Matt Milano a lot. You know what I really like, Steve? I haven't done this for a couple of years. I love when you can see guys grow up sometimes, and I can see it in Matt Milano. Just, you know, a year ago he's on the show, and he's shy, and he's kind of intimidated by whatever we do here. He's fine.
And I
love
totally
when guys get older and grow up. I love that part.
Well, I'll admit it now because he's on. He did a great job with us. From last year, everybody and it was like, he doesn't talk too much. He's real quiet. He was great.
Yeah.
He's changed. I mean, and I'll tell you what, I feel for him too, because when you get in here as a rookie and you all of a sudden you're on a football team with old guys, with men, with families who are like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's just a different – you're not with college kids anymore, right? And you walk in here and there's an adult, for lack of a better term.
Yeah.
And you're like, you shut up and be quiet and mind your manners, right? So you do that for an entire year. You kind of don't know what's going on. Then you find out they're great guys and they're yucking it up. And then, you know, you kind of go through some things and you learn. And then you come around and you see other players come in that are just like you last year.
Yeah.
You think, it is like a different world.
Yeah.
You can see that in him. You see that in him. That's
there's a second year player out in Denver with the Broncos who is growing up and making a shot for a roster spot and maybe even a backup quarterback job. He is, of course, Western New York native Chad Kelly, Jim Kelly's nephew. Last year was like a redshirt year for Chad Kelly, as I don't think he was on the active roster. This year, he's in a bona fide competition for the backup quarterback job with Paxton Lynch, former first-round pick. And last week, Chad Kelly was taking the snaps as a second-year quarterback. They have no rookie quarterback, taking the snaps at the Broncos rookie minicamp and doing pretty well. He's worked out. He's changed his body a little bit. And he talked to the media in Denver about how different he is now than he was a year ago as a rookie.
I think eating a lot of spinach and chicken paid off instead of eating fried food and this and that. So, I came here and kind of knew I needed to move around, get back to my old playing way back in early college and high school. So kind of feeling that I can move around and do some things with my legs, but also being powerful in throwing the ball. I'm just trying to get better every rep, and to come out here for rookie camp and being the only quarterback out here to get all these reps, whether it's throwing routes, running team period, working with coach and individual, I mean, that's how you get better. And to be consistent and repeat everything that you're doing. And being out of the game for a year and a half, there hasn't been any consistency in what I've been doing. So I got to get back to doing that and feeling like myself and going out there and competing at a high level.
Chad Kelly talking to the media this week in Denver. You said something this morning. We were talking about this this story, Steve, about how, yes, he was seventh-round pick, Mr. Irrelevant, a year ago. But when he's straightened out, which he appears to have, and now he's in shape, he's much better talent, skill set than a seventh-round pick quarterback, right?
Oh, he's a bargain in the seventh round. He's got some arm talent, and he's a good player and an athlete. And I think, you know, I talked to his uncle's a close friend of mine, Jim, and you know, even back when he was struggling, he was getting kicked off the Clemson team, and he had to go to three different high schools. You know, he's a little bit of a knucklehead. There's no doubt about it. But you know what?
Put it bluntly.
Yeah, when you get into an environment, particularly in Denver, where you've got some leadership and you got some guys there that you kind of respect out of what you know about, like a John Elway and that kind of thing. Chad is smart enough, I think, to say, you know what, these guys know something. And I'll tell you what, when they told him to get in shape, he did it. And the one thing that has always hallmarked him, and I've talked to some people about it, the one thing he has always done, even when he was in having troubles, when he was in and out, you know, when it came time to buckle up and get it done, he worked hard at it. He worked hard at being a good quarterback. You know, sometimes he wasn't a great teammate. Sometimes he did some silly stuff off the field, no question about it. But when it came time to work at being a good quarterback, he was more than willing to do it. And I think that's going to pay off in that environment. I think he's better suited to be a quarterback in the environment there in Denver than he is maybe any other environment there is. I think he'll be a better quarterback.
Why Denver?
Well, a professional atmosphere,
yeah,
for one, is what I'm talking about. Plus, he is able to fly under the radar, and everything he's going to get there, he's going to have to earn it. At the other levels, it was handed to him, and nobody was willing to either take it away from him or never given the opportunity to take it away from him. He was a guy that kind of, even when he was at Clemson, when he moved into the starting role, he couldn't handle that because they just left, and he was the last guy standing when there was graduations and all of that. At this level, he was the last guy picked in the draft. He had a whole redshirt year as he rehabbed from a knee and a wrist problem. And I think, you know, that having to earn it, especially with a draft pick like Paxton Lynch there and Case Keenum being signed by the team, he knows that if he's going to get any time, he's going to have to earn it. And I think he's the kind of kid who relishes the hard work to do it. So I think he's in a great, great spot. And I've told him, you know, I said, man, you just do you, you know, I'm quietly, not until right now, I'm quietly watching out there because I think he's going to turn some heads. I really do.
They have a first-round pick invested in Paxton Lynch.
Yes, they do. So last year.
It'll be hard to unseat him, I would think.
Well, I don't know what he did last year to get himself into the starting line. Let me just tell you something. Okay.
Good change.
Okay. Chad Kelly's got picked by that regime too.
Yeah.
So I know he's not going to shy away from it. He's, you know, one of his problems is he's a little too confrontational. You know,
yeah.
Paxton Lynch better be able to hold his own,
yeah,
because that's the kind of, you know, you could tell in that interview, he'll tell it. I'm just intrigued by him, and I think it's going to be fun to watch.
Something to watch this summer.
I think it is. I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Lorenzo Alexander joins us. We'll catch up with Zoe when we return. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, the end of another week of off-season conditioning for veterans. They're in phase two of the off-season work. They'll do it again Monday. And then OTAs begin on Tuesday. Rookies around tomorrow for the rookie development program. The Bills reportedly hosting a couple of veterans this week. Wide receiver Russell Shepard and defensive end Ryan Russell reportedly being assessed for possible roster spots here. The Cleveland Browns will appear on HBO's Hard Knocks for the 2018 season. According to ESPN, it'll be the first time the Browns have ever been on Hard Knocks. 0-16 last year under Coach Hugh Jackson. Cleveland has not been to the playoffs since 2002, but they do have the number one overall pick in the draft, quarterback Baker Mayfield, who will be in training camp alongside Tyrod Taylor. Cleveland Browns, the hard knock teams this year. Next week, NFL owners meet in Atlanta with several proposed rules changes on the agenda, including kickoff changes. The proposals need to be approved by 24 of the 32 owners before they're ratified for the upcoming season. It'll make kickoffs more like punts and limit full-speed collisions. NFL owners will also look at player ejections for helmet hits. They are backing off on their original plan to eject players who lower their helmets to initiate contact with opponents. Stanley Cup hockey tonight, Tampa Bay and Washington, game four of the Eastern Conference Finals. Caps lead that series 2-1. They'll play at 8 o'clock tonight in Washington. Last night, Vegas, the Golden Knights, beat Winnipeg 4-2 in game three of their series, and the Golden Knights lead that series 2-1. And in the NBA, the Golden State Warriors and Houston Rockets now tied up at one win apiece after last night's Rockets win 127-105 in Houston. That series now off until Sunday. They'll play 8 o'clock on Sunday for Game 3. In the East, no game tonight, no game Friday. The next game in the East, Boston and Cleveland, is Game 3 on Saturday night at 8 o'clock. The Celtics lead that series 2-0. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Steve Tasker. Joined in studio by Lorenzo Alexander for an off-season edition of The Lowdown. Welcome, Lorenzo. How have you been?
I'm doing great. Enjoying this nice weather outside. Actually came from Dad's and Donuts with my son over at school at Wyndham, hanging out with him in the afternoon. So it's a great day.
Dad's and Donuts at the school?
Yeah.
God, where do I sign up? That is awesome. That is a great idea.
Yeah, it's awesome. So, you know, just a great time to be able to spend time with him. Had a great workout today to finish up the week. And looking forward to OTAs that start next week.
All your years in the league, it strikes me. Have you ever been on Hard Knocks?
No, I have not. I'm glad. I wouldn't.
You want nothing to do with
it?
Tell me
nothing.
Why.
It's too intrusive. I don't know. I think it's a big act. You know, people playing to the cameras. You know, just some of the moments. I think it just, I don't want to be a part of it. It becomes like a circus.
Yeah, I could see that.
And that's, I mean, and the teams I've been on, Washington, really Washington, when you have a lot of things that distract away from football, especially now you add cameras to it.
Big enough circus without
right.
That.
Yeah. I mean,
is that what you're trying to say? Big enough circus without
yeah, that. I mean, it just adds to it, and it's more things for people to talk about and more people to criticize and kind of tear you apart. I mean, it's already hard enough to stay together as it is.
Yeah,
I don't think we've had John Lorenzo since Steve came back, right, from the special teams meeting you went to a couple of weeks
no,
ago?
We no, we haven't spoken since then, yeah. So,
because you guys have a lot in common, covering kicks.
Yeah. Now they came out with their proposal that's going to get voted on. What do you think of them? Because we've been talking off
right.
The air, and I know what you think, but go
yeah,
ahead.
Right, yeah. I mean, actually, obviously I love it because they're not getting rid of it. There's going to be some challenges as far as figuring out timing. You know, how do you cover? You know, when do you want to shed, run around guys, how to block? Just because now you don't have a running start, so that's going to change how fast you get down there. So maybe the – you know, I think kickoff now, I think the average starting point, if you return, is probably around the
23.
20, is it 23? I was about to say 24. It might come out.
It's between the 23 and 24, so it makes less sense to return it than it does just to take the touchback.
Right.
The average after a return is less than the 25, which is where they're giving it to them. So, yeah, that was a big – for the last 2 years, that's been the case, and that was huge, I think, for
me. Yeah, and I see teams even maybe wanting to return it even more now because it's a lack of a running start. So you're not going to have guys down there as fast.
And you can't have even two guys in a wedge. So the reason there's – let's face right. It. The reason there was a wedge all those years because it worked.
Yeah,
you
right.
Have guys come up and it plow a hole
oh, yeah.
Before you go. But here's the thing, too. You take that away, but by the same token, you got all those guys lined up there at the front. You got – of the 22 guys, you've got 18 of them within 15 yards of the ball.
Right.
So it's really a foot race, and it's up to, you know, it's when the ball is kicked, it's going to be like a starting gun.
Right.
That's when everybody goes. It's like
right.
On your marks, get set, and the ball's kicked, everybody goes, you
right.
Know. So, and also, the return team, and once in a while, fans will remember this, and you know this, you go up and quick set somebody. What
yeah,
I mean when
right.
I say that.
Right.
One of the return team will run up forward after when the ball's kicked and push a guy or make him avoid him real wide
mm-hmm.
So that there's a hole in the coverage. You can't do that anymore.
No, not at all. I actually like when guys used to do that because I was a bigger guy, so they tried to stop me before I
right.
Got going. But
what
it
was
let
your
me
philosophy? Did you?
I had two things. So one was they normally let me know where the return was going to be because a lot of times they would jump me and then the guy would run to the opposite side of the field. Well, I'm not going to keep running this way because I know the
right.
Ball is going to be returned to the opposite side.
Right.
The second thing is sometimes they used to try to double me and jump me early.
Right.
Right.
I knew once I avoided them, nobody else had was going to account for me. So it was just a free beeline to the ball.
They were going
to
triple team.
Right. And so it helped me. It actually helped me out as far as another indicator that I would use to get to the ball, which I don't know if a lot of guys are privy to, but the guys that covered well understood how that schematic worked together.
All you have to do is you had to learn to run when you're not looking where you're running. Mm-hmm. You got to look, find the. You can run hard with your eyes up, find the ball where if you're supposed to kick it right and it goes right, you check it quick, say, okay.
If it ain't going that way,
you got to know. And then also, you're running hard looking at who's looking for you.
You, right.
And that's – some guys never get that, you know. But,
yeah,
you
know, no, true.
Ones, I mean, that's important.
Yep. And then another thing I would like to see off of this, a lot of times that wedge would clean up anything because it's hard. The kickoff return team, that front line is probably one of the hardest positions to do to execute at a high level.
It's impossible.
So a lot of times – the wedge was the cleanup. So if you missed your guy, you would go find work, and the wedge would pick up that extra work.
Right.
So it'd be interesting to see how that plays out as far as, well, you see more big hits when guys get beat as far as guys missing their blocks. It's hard to block guys. Right.
When we had when I was a rookie in the last century, we had a return, and I actually led the conference in kick returns the first half of the season before I was injured and lost the second half of the year. But through first 12 weeks of the season, I was leading the league in kickoff returns, and our return was such that everybody dropped back. We didn't have a wedge.
Right.
Everybody dropped back, and they'd man up.
Mm-hmm.
And they just hit it. And we had it so that they would drop to a point where we knew when I caught it and started running, I was going to get there, you know, at that moment. Just after they make contact where the coverage guys got to make a decision.
Right.
And when they make their decisions, the split second later, then I can make mine.
Right.
It was a really successful return for us. I think that's going to come back now because there's no wedge. Everybody's going to have to kind of man up there. And if you can time it right.
Yeah, it makes sense because if you got one guy avoids right, the other guy avoids left, you got that seam that you can hit.
Guys who return kicks, they're good at that.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they can get there. And so I think if somebody like me can have a good year returning kicks, there's some guys out there that, you know, way better than I was. I think they might be too fast though.
Yeah. Sometimes,
well, that's just it.
You know
it's
what I mean?
Timing.
You're timing.
Well, they might be too fast. They might be not. Maybe they're not as smart as me, right?
That's what
But that's how it goes. You get them where they feel that, and that's up to the coach and the player. If you can time it right, that's the. It's not the block. It's timing.
We were always taught when they had the wedge, if the ball was 15 yards or more, you can avoid the wedge because you can avoid and get back in your lane. If it's right behind it, like 8 yards. Don't avoid. You have to split it because if you run around,
you got to make
the returner is out.
You got to knife in then,
right?
Yeah. So that's and I'm with you. So what else grabs you about these kickoff rules? Anything else jumps at you?
Not really. It's just going to be fun to see what different type of schemes. And obviously now you got to be 5x5. You can't do any of the overloads or the different looks. I think you have to have only a certain amount of guys, so you won't see like. The Patriots always give you these funny
six and four,
and they stack, double stack, two rovers coming back. So it's actually going to simplify a lot of things as far as your count because that would mess a lot of people up as well. So now you know who you're blocking. You don't have to worry about as much.
Yeah, we used to have a thing where you'd come in motion and then you'd kind of fall into the line. You'd kind of mess them up that way, or you would stack. So where they'd have to count. And the front guy was always the one, and the second guy was the other count. For me, I think, too, now guys are just going to run 10 yards and they're going to cross.
Yeah.
You know,
we used to have that in our system, too.
Right. So you do that try to pick guys. After plays in. So
it
gives them – what happens is you wait till that guy's going to meet you up, and then you avoid him to the side you're supposed to cross to, and then it makes it easy coverage. So all that's going to be in play. But it is going to be interesting to see how it works. You get a chance to do it in preseason, right?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Lorenzo, a lot of people think it might look more like a punt and it might play out like a punt technique-wise. Do you see it that way?
It may. It's still enough room between those guys because those guys, the return team is far enough back to where they can still retreat, especially since the kickoff team doesn't have a running start. So now it's going to be a little bit more spacing. I think they're going to have more time to actually turn around and locate their guy and sit and wait. Because of that removal of the running start. So, but we'll see how it works out. I'm pretty sure different teams will do it different ways based on what coaches think is going to give them that the winning edge, essentially.
Right.
So we'll see how it plays out.
You guys started talking about it?
We haven't even got to kickoff return yet. It's all about punt right now.
Yeah. They don't really want to put this in because they don't know if this is going to be a
pass or not, too. Yeah.
And I think what will happen is it's all going to be about – what bothers me now as we're sitting here talking about it, because the kick return team can't leave their zone until the ball's kicked either.
Correct.
So it'll be interesting to see how, because they're trying to get away from having a guy back there retreat, turn around, and then start running forward, and he meets a guy, and neither one of them is trying to avoid. That's right. That's the
crusher. But most teams don't leave before now because of the surprise onside kick. So if you start seeing guys, prior that leaving early, especially that tackle, if he's trying to get out there so he can get back and get his block, once in a while you may boot one over there and try to steal your possession. So I don't know. I think guys are still going to be able to run back and set up just because guys aren't getting that extra run.
That's my point.
Start.
If they get back and get set up, what's changed?
Nothing.
Except the
wedge. But the
wedge.
Nothing has changed.
So I don't know if they're going to cut down on concussions or not, but.
True.
Or those what I mean? But they can still tinker with it, I guess.
Yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah.
Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. We're talking special teams, so we might as well talk about the Rick Goslin piece that we talked about with Steve an hour or so ago. Rick Goslin named the all-time special teams unit, and Steve Tasker made that team as a coverage man.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, you saw this.
Rightfully so. I mean, Steve should be in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's no secret about it.
Did you think that before you came to Buffalo?
Who?
About Steve? Did you?
Yeah, Danny Smith was up here, and that's all he talked about. I tell you this all the time. You want me to love on my man again some more? This is my guy right here. I'm a special teamer.
But Danny never coached you, did he?
But it's history. Danny's all about the history of the game, watching film, talk to him.
He was a coach here, and I spoke, I know Danny.
You know, all about the balance, staying on your feet. That was one of his best things.
It was fun.
I took a lot of his rules and put it into my game.
I was telling this, and like you're saying about me, I had a lot of guys I talked about like that too.
Right.
And when I first got here in Buffalo, there was a guy in New England named Mossy Tatupu who's since passed away. And he had gone to a bunch of Pro Bowls. And Rich Goslin said he had only gone to one. I thought he'd gone to like three in a row.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to go back and check. I haven't been able to check it yet, but he was the guy I looked up to, and I got a chance to play against him.
Right.
And he was a great dude, too. Then you get to see guys like Rufus, all those old guys, like Rufus Porter, right. Benny Thompson, Renee Thompson, and all Mike Bates.
Are they brothers? Because I was looking at it.
No.
Obviously, these are some older guys.
They weren't brothers. Rufus Porter was a guy who's like a Von Miller, real small stature defensive end, who all of a sudden emerged as a pass rusher. He quit playing special teams.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And Fred Young was a great guy for that. So it was fun for me to go back and have a guy like Gosling mention all those guys in the past.
Right.
And remember him.
Made sense because I got left off the list. I guess he's John's age,
right.
He's paying homage to all the guys that came
before.
Well,
it's all time. He didn't say current. He said
yeah,
all
but
time.
You know how that
I
is.
I can be part of all time.
Yes, you
here's
can.
Here's the thing. Here's
I'm
the thing. Exactly.
What are you
Absolutely.
Saying now, John?
Here's the thing. All those guys do good today. I know how it is.
Goslin has made this his
break they have work. They have current players on there.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Justin Bethel. Matt Slater.
Yeah.
It's current players on there.
Here's the thing. Here's how it works with the print media.
No, I'm just
basing. The old guys, all the old print media guys, they feel an obligation to call from somebody from the past.
Yeah, I get
because
it.
So they can say that I know something you don't.
Right, yeah, because they saw the guys
they
play.
Saw,
the,
I they remember him. I remember saw him play, and he's this and that. And nobody can dispute it because nobody had game film back then.
Yeah, nobody's pulling it up to check it.
Well,
who doesn't belong on this list? In your mind,
I mean, I don't know enough about all the guys. I'm just we could have had honorable mentions.
They did. No, he does. This is just this is like one's offense, one's defense, but they also have like 53 guys. He put a whole roster together.
Maybe you're on the list.
Let me see. No, I'm not. I'm not on the list. My guy Tracy Smith, who I was a special teams coach out there in Oakland with Brad Seeley, he intentionally said this to me. I think you would like this, even though you're not on the list.
Uh huh.
So I'm
not
on the
list.
No, he always likes to poke at me.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, I don't know enough about enough of the guys.
Did you ever hear Ron Wolfley, Western New York man?
Me and Ron are real tight.
From radio
out there. Yeah,
Arizona,
yeah. Ron is a great guy. Baller belongs on this. I don't know who Albert Shelley is. I don't know him. Obviously, I know Mike's Matt Slater.
Albert Shelley was a three- or four-time special teams player for the Atlanta Falcons. I played against him.
See? Yeah,
Albert
see,
Shelley,
so certain guys I'm not familiar with. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And, of course, I just want –
No, you can have an opinion, too. You
see, now I sound like one of the old-time
guys.
You don't remember, but
fine.
Let me tell
you. Yeah, and it's fine.
Yeah.
And I get some of that. But, I have an ego, too. And I think I'm one of the best to ever do it as well.
There you go.
Yeah. So. No argument here. Hey, while Absolutely. We're talking, we were talking about the kickoff rule changes.
You're better than anybody sitting in this room right now. I'll tell you that right now.
Did you see, Lorenzo, because we talked about this with you a couple weeks ago, at the last owners' meetings when the owners made that change to helmet hits, they talked about ejections for targeting type hits for the helmet. Now they're kind of backing off. All NFL player ejections will be subject to replay review, according to a competition committee proposal next week. They're trying to discourage players from lowering their helmets to initiate contact with opponents, but it won't automatically lead to an ejection. You got to feel pretty good about that, too. That
yeah, I mean, because it's going to happen too often. It's going to be a lot of guys getting thrown out of the game. So I think it was a knee-jerk reaction just trying to combat, you know, some of the things that happened this year. I think Ryan Shazier, you know, that situation added to the fuel to maybe somebody saying, let's stop getting the lower in the heads because we don't want to see a replica of that situation happen again. So I understand it. I think they also wanted to bring more attention to guy, hey, we're thinking about doing some things, so you need to clean your technique up. Coaches, you need to coach this up so we don't have detrimental situations come up that, you know, can cost the guys their lives.
I was on the sidelines when Ryan Shazier got hurt. Mm-hmm. I was doing the game on a Monday night radio game. And the scary part about it for me wasn't that the injury or that it happened. It was the innocuous way the hit looked. It looked like nothing. That was like, I was like, how does that happen on a hit, that hit?
Right, right.
How does that happen when it looked like it was just, you know, like a routine run-of-the-mill little knockdown?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you know, here that kid, you know, his career was ended by it, and thankfully now he's making some progress.
Progress,
but
right.
Nevertheless, that's the scary thing. And I think that, more than anything, spurred the league. You go, wow, what? Wait a minute, you know. And I'm thankfully so, I think, in a lot of respects, because I think they are moving in the right direction. I've said this time and time again. I think the league gets about every issue right. But sometimes they move at a glacier's pace. It takes forever.
Right.
But some of the issues they got right, they've gotten right. So this stuff with the kickoffs and all this and with the head lowering, I think they did a little bit like they did with his kickoff thing.
Yeah, we're going to get rid of it.
Right, and then they say, if you touch another guy's helmet, you're going to go out of the game. I'm like, that's crazy talk.
Yeah.
But because particularly as we know the game to be now, but now they're starting to say, okay, here's what we really mean, and it's a little easier, more palatable.
Right, and which makes sense. So, you know, I'm fine with that as long as they get it right at the end of the day before guys start playing games and getting fined for things that are just unavoidable.
Are you like me too, though? If they make a rule and they're going to enforce it, okay, fine. As long as they enforce it the right way all the time,
right.
I'll adjust, right?
You'll adjust, but you never get to see that. I mean, because it's a defensive –
It's always
defense. It's nothing against the offense, and that's why I think a lot of defensive guys get up in arms because you never see,
offensive line can't use their hands.
Or a lineman coming out and smacking a defenseless corner. They ain't looking. They plan to return and then get smacked. And they get hit helmet to helmet. Right, you never see them guys get fined or running back or receiver unless it's egregious. And it's just in the open field, and it's like a crackback or something that's bad. So I think that's our biggest thing. If you're going to call it on offense and defensive players and not just on defensive guys and put all the onus on us to avoid and put ourselves at more of a risk.
And let's face it, it is about safety, and the defenders are always the guys kind of attacking, you know, and having the shot, tackling and pulling guys down and making the aggressive act.
Right.
Theoretically, the offense is always avoiding, but nevertheless, you're right. There's so many instances that go both ways, and yet all the rules are really designed to limit the defense. Everybody wants more scoring, except the defenses,
which I get. I mean, I think like one cool rule that they put in was like the horse collar rule, right?
That's a great
rule. You know, you had guys like Roy Williams back in the day letting guys run by and dragging them down, hurting guys, and it's a way to get guys down, but you don't want to, you know, hurt guys on purpose. So.
Yeah.
Guys adjusted. They don't do that anymore. And that's something that's easy because it's not in the natural flow of the game to do.
Yeah. Take a call here for Lorenzo while he's out here with us. Greg in Rochester on the line. Greg, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay, guys. I think I'm on to a good topic here for you guys to talk about.
Thank you, Greg.
Just wondering, have you talked amongst yourself about how potentially more difficult the kickoff rules are going to be to referee?
Actually, I think they'll be easier.
It'll be easier.
Yeah, I think it's going to be much easier, Greg. Because when they were discussing this in New York, and they had like there was literally 50 people in the room, and there were like 20 of us sitting around a table, and they all had microphones, and there were all these operations people in the background, and Alberto Riveron
and all these officials, and there's a whole wall of guys who were officials. There are like nine officials in the room mm-hmm. who were talking about exactly what was tough and what was not. And it was a number of things ran through of how they're going to treat the kick when it drops dead. You know, when it's dropped dead, are you going to count the bounce? Are you going to count this or what? Is it a live ball? Is it a not a live ball? Right. And they talked through it, and the officials were, you know, a part of that conversation. So no question, they've had conversations about how difficult this will be to officiate, and I don't think it'll be any more difficult than it has been in the past because they know where their eyes swing and who they're looking at.
It just sort of seems to me that when you add to the rules, and especially since they're new rules, that it has the potential to kind of slow the game down because now you got to talk about they're new and – you know, a big huddle, was that a penalty or was that a, you know, did they breach that rule or I don't know.
I know what you mean.
Well, a lot
I know.
Of the rules It'll are be different. Lineman pre-snap rules, you know, changing. You can't get a running head start. You have to line within this certain box. So yeah. It's really alignment. Some of the other stuff is very easy to call.
Right. If they see two guys running up side by side, that's a penalty.
Right.
That's because that's a wedge. They can't do that. Now, they can still double team up front.
Right.
But they can't. You know, what they're trying to do is get guys from getting peel back blocks. You know, if they quick set and then loop around and come back and get a kill shot on somebody. So they've really eliminated with alignment and some of the rules that happen right at the kick. So they'll be easy to see fouls when those happen. So, yeah, Greg, that's a good question. It will be different. And I think it'll be interesting to see a lot of people, I think the fans, the only thing they're going to notice is that nobody's going to move until the ball's kicked. Everything else, they'll say, it's pretty much the same.
Right. And that's pretty what it looks like to me, on paper, at least right now, until somebody finds that loophole.
Lorenzo
right.
Alexander. Yeah, they will. Lorenzo Alexander in studio. Lorenzo, I want to ask you, you're about ready to wrap up this phase of the conditioning program. And it's been interesting. Just from the outside, Steve and I walked through the fieldhouse, and some days we see tug of war. Some days we see
dodgeball.
Dodgeball was huge yesterday. It was as noisy as
it's been. I was the villain yesterday. Everybody thought I was cheating when everybody cheats, but they all put it on me yesterday. But
what did you
do?
What did you get?
They say you get hit or you block something and don't go out. And I stayed in, which everybody does. But the ones they were calling me on weren't ones. I asked the ref. Am I out? He says, no, you're safe. I'm staying in. I don't care what you say at that point. Right. But they was cheating. No, get him out of here.
Listen.
I asked the ref. I ain't telling on myself either.
We were sitting in our office. Yeah, we were getting ready for the show. And for like an hour and a half, it was just nothing but 90 guys screaming.
Yeah,
right. I mean, there's no description for it. It was like a riot.
That's just what
it is.
And
it was like, and I was like,
that's competition. You got eight teams in there just competing, trying to win and go at it. I mean,
coaches playing too.
Some coaches too.
It never ceases to matter. That's kind of the most fun part because, man, once you put anything on the line,
it doesn't matter.
Once you turn in that room in NFL locker room, man, I tell you, the intensity is like they break the knob off.
Yeah.
It's all the way up all the time, and they just go. And they were screaming.
You weren't a big fan of tug of war, but you like the dodgeball better.
I love the dodgeball. I mean, I like tug of war too. I mean, we just lost. But what made me feel better about it is, and I didn't know this, is one of our guys in tug of war, who we had Pitsy, he got tired on the first one, and who's supposed to step in was Charles Clay, who's a bigger guy, but he didn't feel like going that day for whatever reason. So we put Brandon Riley was our sixth guy.
Brandon Riley.
And I had no clue. I was so tired, and I was in the front pulling. I had no clue Riley was in the back helping us pull. So I felt better after the fact, knowing I had a receiver back there pulling, and we lost. I said, man, they were just bigger and stronger. There's nothing we can do about that.
It's a weight thing.
At that point, I was like, Riley? Oh, I feel much better about
our
fourth place finish.
I want Wyatt Teller.
Yeah.
I want Deion Dawkins.
Right.
Lotulelei. Those guys. Give me those guys. You know, built like that instead of, you know, Brandon Riley,
right.
You know, Austin Prohl, you know, all those 169-pound guys.
Yeah.
It's going to work.
We got more to talk about with Lorenzo. We're coming back for more. Make sure you come back. It is One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back to the show. John Murphy, Steve Tanser, Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us here at One Bills Drive. Hey, Lorenzo, we didn't ask you, my apologies, to weigh in on our Twitter poll. You might have an interest in this. know, we so much, Steve's sick of talking about quarterbacks, which I get.
Of course. Yeah. Who isn't? Right.
Right. So here's our Twitter poll today. The Bills, you know this, 26th in the NFL defensive rankings last year.
Yes.
After the additions this offseason, where will the defense rank in 2018 and why? We've been taking phone calls on it. We've been taking votes on Twitter. And as of right now, more than half, 58% say the Bills defense will rise up to the middle of the pack, somewhere in the middle of the pack. 35% say the Bills are going to be a top 10 defense.
Yes.
7% say about the same. I voted middle of the pack. Steve votes top 10. I imagine you're voting top 10 too.
Right? Of course I'm going to vote top 10, and I'll tell you why. We're not going to have this year that three-game skid like we did last year. And that's the biggest reason, because from 26 to the middle of the pack to top 10, the yardage isn't a huge difference. It's not big when you really look at it. But those three games that we had when we just gave up, it seemed like 500 yards
right.
each week. I mean, that's what threw us way out of the
34
way.
34 against the Jets, 47 against New Orleans, 54 points against the
Yeah,
Chargers.
So when you have games like that, back-to-back-to-back, I mean, you're never going to, no matter how well you started or finished, you're never going to find yourself in that top 10. So I say that we take another step. And we have more consistency from start to finish, and we don't have those lulls like we did last year.
Second year in this defense should make a difference?
It's going to make a huge difference. I mean, if you come out there now, you know, listen to OTA or our phase two walkthroughs and the checks that we're making, how many defenses that we have in, the knowledge, you know, player-to-player communication, it is night and day from last year. I mean, everybody is on board, understands it, and you have a second year, good core group of guys that are helping out young guys, where last year you had to look at the coaches like, is that right? Now I know I'm right. I can help this young guy out, and the coach could be helping somebody else out. So the team becomes more knowledgeable a lot quicker.
What?
Come on, man. Just take a sip of the Kool-Aid. Just one sip.
I'm not anti. Take I know you're going to be better
the
on
Kool-Aid.
Defense. He tries to paint me in a corner. I know you're going to be better
Murph,
on defense.
The Kool-Aid tastes so good. It tastes so good. It tastes so good, Murph. Try the Kool-Aid.
What's that? What do they do? They do yardage giving up?
Yardage.
What's the yardage from where we're at to the top 10? How many yards is that? Did you look at that?
We'll get it.
You got some,
you're right.
Somebody in the back.
Now, here's the thing. You were 18th in the league in points given up, which is really the stat.
Right.
So
that's what you look at.
And it's been my thing, too, kind of the thing. And I agree with everything you said. The second year in the thing, added addition of some great new front seven
right.
players. You got a big-time draft pick in the middle of it right there. Starlo Tulele, Harrison Phillip. You got some guys now.
Right.
And you got enough guys now. You can roll through. You're going to be all that stuff. I also said this. You had, like, two games last year where you only threw – one was for like 56 yards you threw.
Right.
The other
yeah.
was for like 68 yards,
mm-hmm.
right? And you had half the games where your offense didn't throw the football for more than 200
right.
yards. 14 of the games.
Yeah, which you lead to. That's going to help us
right.
anyway. If you had any improvement on that side of the ball, is going to take less series off of us.
Right.
Which takes yards away.
And now you guys did it in the first half of the season. You guys were the engine of the team because of the turnovers you were generating.
Right.
That's hard to replicate. Now getting – 5 turnovers a game, that's hard to do.
Of course.
You did it. You can't, and you really can't count on that, even though you're trying to, and
mm-hmm.
that's a focus and all that. But the other team, you know, can go and can, you know,
protect the ball. I mean, at the end of the day.
But even so, it was my contention that with a better passing game, a guy that can pull the trigger more,
right.
I mean, they're going to stay on the field more often, score more points, and put you in a position to rush the passer more. I mean, they're going to have the lead more often.
Right. That's why everything ties in. It's a team sport, right?
Right.
You know,
and I thought that would make your defense play better.
I think so. I mean, and I think the great example, if people can't even relate to it, is a Peyton Manningless Indianapolis Colts team. You know, they played great defense for a lot of times, but when Peyton Manning left and they often struggled –
right.
Their defense looked horrible. They couldn't play the run already,
oh, yeah.
but they was always in passing situations.
Oh, yeah.
But as soon as he left and they was playing, you know, close games, they just started getting blown out just because they couldn't play any defense.
I have your answer for you. So last year the Bills, 29th,
uh-huh.
gave up a total of 5,682 yards total, 16 games. The Bears were the 10th-ranked defense. They gave up 5,100 yards.
See?
So it's 576 yards.
And you put those three games in there, that's
30 yards a game. Is that right?
It's 36 yards per game.
36 yards a game.
It's not a lot. I'm seeing it. So that's what I'm saying. It's not a big jump to go from where we were at to top 10 at all. Especially when you eliminate those games.
Huh?
And that's what we plan to do, having consistency. And even if you have one bad game instead of three, which sometimes happens just throughout the course of the season, you still find yourself in the top 10.
This is why
we're gonna be discussing this quite often.
And a better offense.
You forced me into a position, Steve, where I'm going to have to
a change.
Make a wager.
A wager? No, we can wager. Can I get in on this?
You can
why
wager.
Not?
You can.
Why not? I can't? A dinner?
Club policy.
Is it club policy?
One Bills Live policy.
Oh, okay. Man, I wanted in on that.
Saying,
you know, free meal at the Grange or something like that?
The one wager we made on the draft pick, one of us came out on top.
In a couple of different ways. He won like three ways on the draft.
Just bet for both of us, Steve, and I'll just show up.
I got you. I got you, man.
Speaking of showing up,
I'll get side bet in.
Tomorrow you're showing up at the Harvey Austin School, Sycamore Street in Buffalo for the Bills, United Way of Buffalo, and Erie County, celebrating local students' engagement in digital character education program.
Right.
Steve and I are at a loss. I have no idea what that means.
Right. So it's a program partnership, NFL, United Way, EverFi, which is actually the digital program. I've done some work with them through my foundation. And they have a digital online program where they take kids through different scenarios, teach them different lessons on a computer program, you know, whether it's from bullying, you know, making smart decisions, encouraging people. And all I have to do is come in and pretty much reinforce what the program is teaching, obviously using my life and testimony to help make some of this stuff real. Because sometimes on a computer, I don't really know. But, you know, you bring in an NFL player, somebody with some statue, and you can kind of help reinforce what the teachers and the programming are emphasizing.
Yeah, it's an innovative learning program by EverFi, EverFi,
right.
Incorporated. It's presented by the NFL and the United Way, and you're going in to help out.
And it's a great program. So these kids have done this program throughout the year, and they do different modules that focus on different aspects of your character.
So is this kind of like at the end of the year, school year now that we're in? This is kind of the culmination
right.
of their year.
So
they've been
we get
working
to bring
on this
an
whole
NFL player to come in. It's kind of an awards-based thing for going through the program, obviously with the NFL having the use of the players to come in and just – again, just reinforce their progress and encourage them to continue to become great people, which I think oftentimes is lost in the shuffle at school.
Middle schoolers at Harvey Austin School. Lorenzo will be there tomorrow, 11 a.m. at the Harvey Austin School.
You got another thing, too, the Aces Foundation. That's your foundation.
Right.
At Strikers Lane, you're going to go in and you got a bowling tournament, right?
Yeah. Strikers are going to be out there June 9th from 12 to 3. Buffalo Bowling Benefit. Eventbrite.com is where you can sign up at. Also, you can go to my website, LorenzoAlexander.org. And this is really birthed out of the partnerships with the South Park High School that I have and as well the Bell Center. And I've pledged $20,000 through my foundation and just allowing the community to get involved. Obviously, it's to raise money, but also to bring people together. Oftentimes, we have a lot of active people here in the community, and they don't have the connection to maybe somebody else doing something similar or something different, and just to engage each other so we can come together because we can make a bigger impact when things are kind of pushed together and going in the same direction versus you do something over here on your own, they over here on their own. So it's just a great way to come out, and then we'll have several players. I know Eddie Yarbrough will definitely be out there as much as some other players as well.
You do the bowling tournament out west in your hometown of Oakland, too.
Yeah,
right?
I did one in Oakland this past year. I do that annually, but this is the first time I brought it to Western New York. A lot of people on Twitter were hitting me up about coming out and doing one here, so I decided to, and it's $57. You know, we get food, bowling, autographs, some gift bags as well, autograph pictures, and then we'll also have some silent auction items, and then also with your ticket, you'll get entered into our door prize raffle where I'll give away jersey, game cleats, and some other cool things just by showing up.
Buffalo Bowling Benefit at the Aces Foundation at Strikers Lane and 50 Michael Road in Buffalo. Thanks. That's going to be kind of neat. That's on June 9th, though.
June 9th, Saturday afternoon.
A couple Saturdays away.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Yeah.
You tweeted something the other day that got our attention here on the show. We had Lorenzo Alexander, or we had London Fletcher on the show on Tuesday, and I guess we didn't realize, but of course you played with London in Washington.
Yeah, I played with London for, 5 or 6 years? He actually became my mentor.
You guys are boys then,
yeah, we're
right?
tight. Yeah. He's like my big brother. We used to ride to the games together to the hotel the night before the games. Our families are real close. I go down there and visit him and his family often. So he's a guy that, you know, even now, you know, being 14 years, when I transitioned last year, and I'll do the same thing this year, since he has access to all 22, hey, man, what do you see on film? What should I be doing?
Right.
You know, I just continue to allow somebody of that stature who played that great to kind of speak into my life and help me as a football player. And I didn't realize he had over 200 tackles here.
First year
as a free agent. I mean, that's crazy.
You talk about free agents coming in. I don't know why they paid that guy that much.
Right.
He came in, man, 200 tackles. nobody was complaining about Leonard Fletcher.
Not at all. Yeah, and he's a monster. He's been like that the whole time.
He's a monster. He's like my height.
Well, monster is a mentality.
Right.
You know, going beast mode. You was a monster too. I mean, at your height and your weight.
Yeah, I didn't play middle linebacker.
But you played special teams.
That.
Leonard, he could play special teams, but a lot of guys couldn't do what you do that have bigger stature. But this dude, phenomenal leader, probably smarter than athletic. He's probably the only guy that I've played with who I think could actually call a game and play at the same time.
Right.
He has that type of ability and knowledge of the game. And, I mean, he's just a dominant guy.
Like you, undrafted, right?
Undrafted.
He came out of
John Carroll. Yeah, he'll let you know he was a hooper. Back in the day, he was, 5'9", but he could dunk. You know, we have a video of it. Nobody believed it until he showed the video.
I could dunk back in the day.
Oh, okay, see?
Yeah. There's still people alive who will tell you that they saw it. It didn't happen that long ago.
Did you ever talk to London about playing in Buffalo, Lorenzo?
Yeah, I called him. He's one of the first guys I called.
Did you? Yeah.
Because I have a lot of connections here. We talked about Danny Smith.
Sure.
London Fletcher, Derek Dockery, Mike Williams. I know those last two names people don't want to talk about too much, but... Yeah. I have a lot of guys that have played up here that made it easier for me to sign once I found out.
How'd you know Mike Williams?
Played in Washington for maybe a year.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had a rough go here.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Good guy.
That's right, where it goes, man.
Right.
He had a rough go. What's up? You probably got this tomorrow with the United Way thing at Harvey Austin School. You got a big weekend plan?
You have that. I'm doing something else with some of the sponsors over at with PSE. Over at the stadium tomorrow, me and Micah had to be over there talking to them about the upcoming season and things we're doing in the community. Suns has a baseball game.
Orchard Park Little League?
Orchard Park Little League.
Good
and
Little
then,
League.
And then head out to go to church on Sunday. So it's a good weekend.
Yeah.
Fun field. Nice.
Thanks
field.
For carving out a little time for us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. I'm on my way to a massage now, so anytime.
You're not going to Fort Erie again?
No, I don't do that anymore. We actually, our guys got certified in the stretch stuff, so I do everything with our guys here. But massage is at the house. She's coming over.
All right.
All right, man.
Thanks, Lorenzo.
Great seeing you.
Appreciate you guys. Anytime.
You bet.
Lorenzo Alexander joining us in studio. Steve and I back with more in a moment. One Bills Live from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. From today's show, presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Doug Farrar on the show about 1 o'clock or so from Bleacher Report, former SportsIllustrated.com NFL writer and now NFL writer for Bleacher Report. He thinks Tremaine Edmonds, Buffalo's first-round draft pick, the linebacker from Virginia Tech, could quite possibly wind up as the Defensive Rookie of the Year. Here's what he said.
I mean, if I'm looking at a defensive player in this draft class, I can't see one with more athletic potential that we have not yet seen than Tremaine Edmonds. And that's always a dicey thing with athletic potential, but he's shown enough. I mean, the stuff he does run-stopping from sideline to sideline for his size, I don't know that I've seen a linebacker that big play that fast on a consistent basis.
Doug Farrar, interesting comments on Tremaine Edmonds. Also, Matt Milano joined us, Bill's second-year linebacker. And we talked with him about kind of our topic of the day, the ranking of the Buffalo defense at the end of the year. It was 26 last year. What does he think it'll be this year? Here's what Matt Milano said.
Definitely helps a lot. You know, last year I was just kind of getting my feet underneath me. But with the addition of a couple new guys and with the experience of just learning the defense last year, that was our first year running that defense. So I think our goal right now is top five. So we're trying
top
to be
Seamer.
Top five in all categories of defense.
I'm glad he thinks he'll be top five. Lorenzo thinks he'll be
chime
top
in
10.
On those guys.
They haven't done it yet, Steve. We'll see. I'm not rooting against it. Believe me, I know they're going to be better on defense. I do.
You just... Oh, man.
Don't
paint
me into that corner. I know they're going to be better on defense. Our Twitter poll.
I know you are.
94% of respondents in our Twitter poll believe, like I do, that they're going to be better defensively. On Twitter, we asked folks to respond. Bills defense, 26th last year. After their additions in the offseason, where will they rank in 2018? 58% of you think middle of the pack. I'm there. 35% of you say top 10 defense. 7% say about the same. What are you laughing about? 93% say it's going to be a better defense. I'm there. Too.
And I get it. That's the easy pick, I guess.
top 10 defense. We'll see. We'll see. I hope you're right.
Considering there's no consequences for being wrong for most of the respondents on our Twitter poll.
Right, which is what I'm going to change for you.
Come on, man.
I'm going to have you put something up to see how really strongly you believe in that. Hey, this came up today. We didn't get a chance to talk about it today. Terrell Owens, T.O., remember him? He was here 1 year. Hasn't played in the NFL since 2010. He spent 20 days with the Seahawks in 2012. Age 44, T.O. still thinks he can play, and he's been working out hard. He put up some video on the internet from a workout in L.A., and during that video, he called out Odell Beckham and Dez Bryant to come and work out with him. 6 Pro Bowls, 16 seasons in the NFL, one of them in the Buffalo Bills, 44 years old. T.O., Terrell Owens, says he can still play. He's going to the Hall of Fame, I think, right? Is he?
Not this year. Maybe he is.
Yeah, eventually he's going to the Hall of Fame. I thought it was this year. Maybe not. But could he play at age 44 at receiver? I mean, come on.
No.
You don't even think about that one?
No. No.
You going to tell him that?
Listen, yeah. He's not going to play in the Hall. He's not going to play in the NFL this year. He's going to sign him.
It'd be crazy.
And the fact that he's not in the Hall of Fame is proof that no matter what you do and where you go, it always matters what kind of person you are. Because there's no other reason that he's not in the Hall of Fame. He is an all-time phenomenal player in the National Football League, and he is not in the Hall of Fame.
He isn't this year. He is going in.
Is he?
I just looked it up.
All right, there you go. He finally got in.
He's going in.
Because he did not get in. And that's a guy that should have been a rubber stamp, first ballot, oh, my gosh, why isn't he already in? Oh, he wasn't eligible kind of guy. And the fact that he had to wait lets you know.
What? Never arrested? Never got in trouble? Never ran a foul?
Murph, you know, the guy was a crackpot.
Yes, he was. I witnessed it firsthand.
He was a guy that was – he is the very definition of a prima donna,
yes.
High maintenance.
Yes, look at me.
Spoiled – all-star athlete.
Watch me work out in my driveway and outside my house.
He was the quintessential worst stereotypical professional athlete of our age.
Really? Without any criminal record?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying – yeah, those guys, that's
the
different.
Worst?
That's different. I'm not talking about criminals. I'm talking about a guy whose personality and his persona and his public image and all the things he did with all the teams that he was on made him the kind of guy that it was a real question as to whether you wanted to sign one of the best guys to ever play that position in the history of the game.
I can't disagree with that.
And that's the only – and
I would disagree that he was one of the worst, you know, guys to play in the league.
No.
Take a look at the newspaper today.
No. I'm not talking about – I'm talking about being a high-maintenance, stereotypical, spoiled athlete.
Yeah.
Nobody could hold a candle to that guy.
He knew how to get attention.
Oh, my gosh. He was a man. You talk about it in terms of that. He was brilliant at that, too, not only playing football but exploiting it to get media attention in any way, shape, or form. Yeah, he was a master.
Speaking
of
media attention, we just got a minute or two left here. I mentioned to you, and I asked Lorenzo about this, Hard Knocks is going to follow the Cleveland Browns, HBO's Hard Knocks. You surprised me this morning when you told me you have never
– I've never seen a single
episode of Hard Knocks.
Never seen a single episode.
Why? I mean, have you avoided it, or you just never had an opportunity? Or?
I just never sought it out, that's for sure. And then
– it can be pretty good television.
I've heard – well, it's won Emmys. I mean, it's award-winning, so it's got to be better than the swill that I watch most of the time. I don't know.
But you'd really – I get it. You don't want it here. You don't want it around
I'm a,
the Bills.
Listen, Murph,
I get
I'm a,
all that.
I am a live sports television watcher, and that's about the extent of it.
Yeah.
Golf, football, hockey, NBA.
No.
Those four I'll watch if they're on.
I'll confess, I don't watch a lot of Hard Knocks and haven't. Last time I really watched a lot was when they were with Rex's Jets. It was wildly entertaining that year.
But, really? That does not surprise
me. Oh, it was hilarious.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Go eat a sandwich, right? Go eat a snack. It was unbelievably funny. But it's definitely great television. It certainly is great television. I'm glad it's not here.
It's real.
I mean, I'm surprised that Cleveland, 0-16 Cleveland, has the kind of attention, or I guess they don't have a choice, I would guess, but wants the kind of attention to have Hard Knocks.
Well,
them
from
around.
A three-hour drive away up here in Buffalo, it's easy to look down and see Hugh Jackson being backed into a corner. I just don't think Hugh Jackson has much to say about what goes on in Cleveland outside the football lines. I think the decision for Hard Knocks, I think a lot of things are – they're just saying, we were 0-16 last year. You better be quiet and coach up a pretty good football team because this is your last chance. And he's doing it. Whatever they want to do, he's saying, I'm on. Okay, I'm good. And, you know, like, he was glowing in how cool he thinks it is that they're getting hard. Yeah. Come on. He's the first coach ever to say that. You know, most of them are like going,
You know what's going to be good about Hard Knocks with the Browns? The Bills and Browns play each other week two of preseason in Cleveland. Yeah, yeah. So you think that game will be at least pretty much featured on that episode of Hard Knocks, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
With all the, you know, be the Browns storylines, but the Bills will be part of it too.
That'll be fun to watch. Then, you know what? I might catch that episode, my first ever episode of Hard Knocks. I will.
You should catch it. Hey, tomorrow on the show, Steve Weiss from NFL Network scheduled to join us. Come on back for that. I want to thank our production assistants, George Blast, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hamilter, Kelly Rude, J.J. Torito, James Roble, Kevin Karchus, and our producer, Jay Harris. Steve and I back tomorrow at 12 noon with another installment of One Bills Live presented by Kaleida Health. We come to you from One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.